Deborah and I are going to be celebrating our 20th year of wedded bliss coming up here pretty soon.
And we have a special show for you on April 1st about that. Stay tuned now for the Peter B. Collins Show coming up next after the CBS News.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. That was 5 years ago. The shock and awe was real. Saddam Hussein's government and his forces didn't last long, but insurgents and terrorists have been a lot harder to beat.
Battle in Iraq has been longer and harder and more costly than we anticipated. But it is a fight we must win.
I'm Cammie McCormick. General David Petraeus said by phone from Baghdad there is an enormous amount of work ahead in Iraq.
The progress in Iraq is fragile. It is tenuous.
In Baghdad, though security has improved,
there are countless fault lines, in some cases micro fault lines. It's not as if there's only Sunni to the west and all Shia to the east and that the killing has stopped because there's a wall between them.
And as for al-Qaeda in Iraq,
it remains capable of lashing out at any given time.
And that's why he says he hasn't decided yet whether to recommend a pause in troop withdrawals after the summer.
5 years in, and protesters make their feelings clear. They want to get out now. At a vigil in St. Paul, Minnesota, both sides are being heard.
It's my duty as an American to bear witness to the deaths that my government is perpetrating in my name. For me to sit and do nothing would make me complicit.
We need to stay in there. We're fighting the war. We're winning the war. If we pull out right now, we're going to lose it all. 4,000 soldiers died for no reason then.
In fact, more Americans are saying that these days. CBS News Director of Surveys, Kathleen Frankovic.
Americans are feeling better about the surge of troops into Iraq. In fact, 42% say that surge is making things better there. That figure is 25 points higher than it was just a year ago.
And perhaps to illustrate how sharply the divide really is, the poll finds 56% say John McCain would make the right decisions about Iraq. He plans to stay, win, and a long-time commitment. 56%, same number, also say Barack Obama would make the right decisions. He wants to leave right away. Hillary Clinton was 3 points behind him. There are 13 people dead now to the nasty weather that has pounded the middle of the country eastward from Texas to Pennsylvania, Illinois to Kentucky. Floods have been reported around rivers and streams in several states. A foot and more of rain has fallen. An SUV blasted through a crowd of people at an auto auction near Chicago today, leaving at least 15 people injured in Crestwood, Illinois. WBBM's Pamela Jones.
Folks are telling me they saw bodies just strewn everywhere. People were conscious, but no one could get up. No one that was hit by this rolling vehicle could get up.
Two of the injured were emergency responders hurt while trying to help the victims. Astronauts are all rested up for spacewalk number 4. This one is designed to test a caulking gun and the goo that could be used to plug holes. Simple though that may sound, it's pretty important stuff if you remember Columbia. On Wall Street, the Dow down 293 points today. The Nasdaq was off 58. S&P lost 32. This is CBS News.
At Mercedes-Benz, our affordable certified pre-owned vehicles come with the rich legacy of engineering that is Mercedes-Benz. And a 155-point inspection, roadside assistance, and a one-year warranty up to 100,000 miles. Every certified pre-owned Mercedes-Benz retains its integrity because, as a company, we have ours. Stop by your local authorized dealer and ask about the certified pre-owned program by Mercedes-Benz.
See dealer for complete details and warranty and roadside assistance. Abbreviated inspection applicable to vehicles less than 15 months old with less than 18,000 miles.
Is Progressive.com an auto insurance utopia? Well, in a typical utopia, you spend hours frolicking in lush green meadows and splashing around in crystal clear waterfalls. But in an auto insurance utopia, you can compare Progressive rates to those of other top companies all in about 8 minutes, leaving you plenty of time for, well, frolicking. Start saving today at Progressive.com or call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. That's Progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, Mayfield, Ohio. Prices vary based on how you buy. Comparison rates available in most states and situations.
A father in Georgia loses it and takes everything with him.
When 28-year-old Eddie Harrington took his three young children and bolted from his home in Columbus, Georgia 2 weeks ago, FBI agent Steve Emmett says it looked bad from the start.
He left behind a letter to be found by his girlfriend where he threatened to kill those children.
That sparked a statewide Amber Alert, but Harrington and the children failed to turn up until now. All four bodies were found off a highway near Columbus. So far, police aren't saying how they died. Pete Combs, CBS News, Atlanta.
In Lakeland, Florida, the Polk County School District says for years they've been paying about 53 of their teachers too much, more than they were supposed to be paid at any rate. Teachers, secretaries, and other staff members collected something on the order of $77,000 each. Funny, no one said a thing. Now they must pay back at an average of $600 a month, according to state law. Some of them are saying, we don't have that money. We can't do it. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
A wine is only as good as the vineyards it comes from. For Cabot, America's favorite Pinot Grigio, that means grapes grown in northern Italy, where Cabot gets its light, crisp taste. Not surprisingly, Cabot's distinctive Pinot Noir is also America's favorite. So when you're looking for a truly exceptional wine, white or red, Cabot is the perfect choice.
The number one Italian wine in America, the Cabot Collection, elevating life. Try Cabot Riesling, the luscious, flavorful addition to the Cabot Collection. Imported by Palm Bay International, Boca Raton, Florida.
You know, a wise man once said, success is easy. Do the right thing the right way at the right time. Simple, right? Of course, small business owners will tell you that finding time is what makes it tough. That's why more small business owners turn to Visa Business. It has multiple payment options like credit and debit that are accepted at millions of locations worldwide. And it helps reduce paperwork by tracking your finances. To see more ways Visa can help, go to visa.com/small business. Business takes Visa.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
One, two, three.
Greetings from the nation's capital. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. This is our third and final broadcast from Washington this week. I'll be returning to California tomorrow and be back at our secret studio where we normally originate. And today I want to thank Bill Press, Paul Woodhull, and the team here at Jones Radio Networks in Washington, where we are originating. Bill Press does his program that airs on just about every radio station that my show is on. And that, of course, clears 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern and is often live 3 to 6 a.m. In California and Oregon. And Bill is a great guy, and I'm really delighted to be able to use his studio. Thank you, Bill. Lots to talk about on the program. We're going to focus on two key issues today, for the most part. The fifth anniversary of Bush's ignominious invasion and occupation of Iraq, and reaction to that. He gave a speech riddled with the same lies that we've been hearing for years at the Pentagon earlier today. And we have some sound bites for that, from that that we'll play for our guests. Ray McGovern is in the elevator on his way up here right now. It's raining in Washington, and it delayed his arrival here at the studio, but he'll be with us shortly. He's, of course, a former CIA intelligence officer. He was the guy who gave President Reagan his daily briefings back in the 1980s. And Ray is a founder of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity and an outspoken critic, a man who writes prolifically about the issues of war and the wrongfulness of so much of it. Also on today's program, coming up a little later this hour, we'll talk with Congresswoman Barbara Lee, Democrat from Oakland and a staunch leader of the Out of Iraq Caucus. She still has the distinction of being the only member of Congress to vote against the Patriot Act. Well, wait a minute. No, it was the post-9/11 authorization to attack al-Qaeda that she voted against. And, of course, she has voted against the war in Iraq and the Patriot Act and many other regressive pieces of legislation. And she's a real heroine of mine. Also on today's program, Melanie Sloan. She contributes to our show almost every week, Executive Director of CREW, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. And it'll be my chance to meet her in person. That's one of the reasons we stayed an extra day here. I've never met Ray McGovern in person, never met Mel Goodman in person. Mel will follow Melanie Sloan coming up in our second hour today. Mel also worked at the Central Intelligence Agency, and he has a new book out called Failure of Intelligence, The Decline and Fall of the CIA. We've got room for your phone calls at the top of the third hour in our free speech zone. And then Robert Perry, another contributor who joins us every week on the program, Bob Perry of ConsortiumNews.com, will be with us in our final half hour on the program today. Ray McGovern has entered the studio. Turn on his microphone as soon as you can, Katrina. Oh, good. Ray, welcome. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Hey, nice meeting you. Finally.
What a pleasure to see you. Lean on into that microphone. People are hanging on every word. How are you, Ray?
I'm doing fine.
Well, good. And how's your health? I know you've been working on that a little bit.
Well, I've got a little case of lymphoma.
Yeah?
And I'm doing some chemo, but I'm looking a little bit like Yul Brynner, but outside of that, it's going pretty well.
So did you used to have hair? I don't know.
I did, yeah.
See, I'm into that natural bareheaded look, and nature gave that to me.
I was reminded of my grandmother's saying about why a bald head is like heaven.
Yes.
It's a bright, shiny spot up above where there's neither dying nor parting.
Ray, welcome. And I just want to thank you for the many times you've taken time to talk with us on my radio program. My listeners value your opinions and the various narratives that you've brought us on important issues over the last few years. I remain proud of your mini confrontation with Donald Rumsfeld in Atlanta a couple of years ago, when you were permitted to ask a question and then ridiculed as a heckler by the corporate media. But you stood your ground, and you asked tough questions of Donald Rumsfeld. And I want to contrast that today with the president's incredible mendacious speech that he gave at the Pentagon, of course, using soldiers and our military forces as a photo op backdrop. And it was an attempt to claim glory for what we've done over the last 5 years in his elective invasion and occupation of Iraq. And it's just remarkable, too, the way the media treats this. I thought about watching it on Fox, and I just had breakfast, so I didn't. And I turned on CNN, and they gave us a live shot from Baghdad to set up the president's speech. And the reporter is standing on this broad boulevard, and in the distance you see those huge swords, the monument that Saddam built for himself after the glory of the eight-year Iraq-Iran war in the 1980s. And they tried to make it look like this was a scene of peace and tranquility as a result of the surge. And here's a reporter standing there, only in the background you could see a convoy of six Humvees securing the perimeter. And in another shot, a big orange MRAP, you know, one of these hardened vehicles designed to withstand an IED blast, was there on patrol too. So how different was the scene that they tried to give us to support the Bush administration's mischaracterization of the status of Iraq? And it's just another one of those phony photo ops like the ones that Cheney and McCain did 2 days before.
Well, that's exactly right, Peter B. I think, and I've told people what I think about this, that the biggest sea change that I've seen in this town, this Washington town, for the 45 years I've been here, is that we no longer have, in any real sense, a free press, a free media. And this came home doubly clear over the weekend when Winter Soldier, the Iraq vets of our armed forces, went before the cameras and confessed the kinds of things that had happened in Vietnam, the first Winter Soldier, of course, featuring John Kerry.
Right.
And not one major media picked that up or told
that. Oh, but come on, Ray. We're still dealing with Elliot Spitzer, and Governor Patterson has admitted that he and his wife both had affairs.
Yeah.
And there's some foreign guy who's had a three-way, a Tehranian police chief.
Yeah.
I mean, there's sex news out there, Ray. And you want people to focus on the war?
Well, you know, if it weren't for people like you and people like Free Speech TV and others, it would be impossible to get the real story. And that's why it's so important that we realize that we're behind the eight ball here, that most Americans are not able to get the real story because, well, let's face it, a lot of them have two jobs. They come home, take care of the kids, feed them, and they want to be, you know, they want to be entertained. They put their feet up, and they think they're being told news by Fox News. And so we have to find clever ways to make sure that we get the message out. And the message is that that this president, his words mean nothing, nothing at all. And for this president to say that the war was worth it, you know, I remember the first time he said that. You know, he said this was worth it, and that those who had fallen for an honorable cause. And to her great credit, Cindy Sheehan said, "That's enough. I can't abide this." In the middle of a speech she was giving to Veterans for Peace, She left and went to Crawford and said, I'm going to ask the president what this noble cause is. Mm-hmm. She never got an answer, of course, because it is no noble cause. It is the first resource war of the 21st century. It's all about oil and empire. And if people don't realize that now, well, there's documentary evidence to prove it. There are statements by people from Greenspan down to Wolfowitz. It's very clear. When the president added a signing statement to the defense authorization bill saying, hey, these provisions that say I cannot fund permanent military bases in Iraq, the other one that says I cannot influence the disposition of oil from Iraq, well, as commander-in-chief and as the person who's the ultimate decider, those provisions cannot be construed as binding my hand. So there it was, proof positive. Two reasons for the war, the oil and the military bases, to secure our imperial position in that part of the world.
Ray McGovern, today he repeated the litany of lies regarding the origins of the war, the nobleness of the cause. Here's a quote: the battle in Iraq is noble, it is necessary, and it is just. And with your courage, the battle in Iraq will end in victory. He never defines victory. He doesn't define the real mission of what our soldiers, 160,000, are committed for there today, and all those contractors that round out our force on the ground there in the 200,000 to 400,000 range. And so, Ray, the other thing I want to point out is that on CNN, after the president completed his speech, there was no critical commentary. Mm-hmm. There was no one there to say, well, you know, he may have just gilded the lily a little bit here and there. Nobody was there to point out that the only hint that he offered of any self-criticism, the battle in Iraq has been longer and harder and more costly than we anticipated. Nothing about the Bremer blunders. Nothing about the whole way that Rumsfeld insisted on a smaller force and that the so-called surge was a minor recognition of the failure to properly prepare for this mission, as misguided as it was.
Well, you know, you really have to look at the strange mindset of the president here. You know, I think he's certifiable. I really do. If you look at his attitude toward, for instance, what he said just last week, talking to the troops out in the field, saying, you know, I really wish I were younger and I'd go out to Afghanistan, be on the front lines. I really envy you. You know, you really, it must be real, real romantic. Well, what kind of person is that? What kind of person is that to say that kind of thing in these circumstances? Yeah. The other thing I will say is that there is a very strong sadistic characteristic in this president. And that is proven by many things, but the most glaring is when he was a senior at Yale, he used to take coat hangers, put them over open flame, make them white hot, and sizzle the buttocks of pledges, 18-year-old pledges who wanted to be in his fraternity. Now, one of the pledges learned who George Bush was and who his dad was, and so called the New York Times and said, you know, this really shouldn't be happening. And the New York Times came out and interviewed George W. Bush. You know what he said? Oh, give me a break. These are no worse than cigarette burns, for Pete's sake, you know. It's kind of fun. It's just, you know, hazy. Now, doctors, psychologists, all kinds of people tell me, you know, who is it that sort of gloats over causing cigarette burn type wounds on other people?
Well, it's like he's never left the frat house, and that ties in with Rush Limbaugh's characterization of Abu Ghraib.
Yeah.
You know, that's just some guys having a little fun. Yeah. We're going to continue in just a moment. Ray McGovern is with me here in the studio in Washington, D.C. If you want to talk with him, get on the line now at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. More in a moment here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Hi, this is Sheila Gale. Listen to my show every Saturday from 3 to 5 p.m. 2 hours of in-depth talk on effective ways to help us get through life's greatest challenges, whatever the crisis. Addictions, illness, fears, breakups, money problems. I'll bring in the expert guests and we'll do it with some humor. The Sheila Show, brought to you by Sun Street Centers. For alcohol and drug treatment, go to www.sunstreetcenters.com.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service has two locations to serve you better wherever you live. Both locations feature full-service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
One specializes in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for fast, friendly, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service, now located in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road in Soquel Drive in Aptos Village, across from the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Give Juan a call at 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Don't forget to ask Juan how KRXA listeners can save an additional 10% at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Hey, this is Larry from Acme Coffee, and if, like me, you own a business and are tired of waiting through aggressive sales reps pushing you to advertise on mediocre network TV stations or stale radio broadcasters, contact KRXA 540 sales manager Larry Rathall at 394-5792. AM 540's committed listener base will help you grow your business. I know, because they're helping me grow mine. Call Larry at 394-KRXA.
And we continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, live from Washington, D.C. It's our third and final day in the nation's capital, and we've got some great guests here. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll talk with Congresswoman Barbara Lee, the Democrat from the Bay Area, a staunch opponent of the war in Iraq. And I want to find out from her if there's any real move afoot in the Congress to cut off funding for the war. People talk about it, but I don't feel the Democrats are going to do anything about it this year. Ray McGovern's in the studio with me now. He's a co-founder of VIPS, Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. Ray, let's listen to a soundbite from the president's speech this morning. We'll get your reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the computer is declining to play it. That's a computer with some taste.
If we were to allow our enemies to prevail in Iraq, the violence that is now declining would accelerate, and Iraq would descend into chaos.
This is the "we can't leave" card, Ray.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it never talks about the origins of this mess and that we can't leave because he injected us into a place we shouldn't be. But this is the fear card, in a Trump suit.
Yeah, and it's a very clever sort of propagandistic tool. You never hear the word withdrawal without a couple of adjectives before it. You know, it's always got to be precipitous or precipitate or rapid.
Premature
or quick or all that kind of stuff. As a matter of fact, the administration prevailed on the U.S. intelligence community to entertain one option about Iraq, and that was what will happen if there's a precipitate withdrawal, okay? Now, Senator Durbin, to his credit, asked the head of the community, now, why was it that you were not asked to entertain the possibility of a gradual withdrawal, a six-month withdrawal, a normal withdrawal, or maybe just a withdrawal without an adjective before it? And I had a, you know, I almost felt sorry for the intelligence official. He sort of coughed, and what he said, of course, was, hey, I had no choice. This is the only one they wanted me to explore. So it's so, so transparent, okay? Yeah. Now, if you look at what the Iraqis say, you know, it really, really, it's really strange. All these polls indicate that, 60, 70% of the Iraqis say, look, we want you out of here, you know? And we in Washington, or the powers that be, sit back and say, you know, those Iraqis, they really, really kill me. Don't they know it's going to happen if we leave Iraq? I would suggest that they know a heck of a lot better than we do what's going to happen if we leave Iraq. And the only solution is to get out of there. We have no business in there. Disavow any intention to have permanent military bases or enduring military bases, whatever they want to call them.
Yeah.
Disavow any intention to have special rights to the oil, and then invite others, the Arab League people, the Europeans, the Indians, and the PACs, to come in behind us and help us to exit as gracefully as is possible at that point. That's the solution to that, a gradual, deliberate withdrawal.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you've got a perpetual situation where, number one, we're in there immorally and illegally, and number two, we can't, you know, quote, win this because there's nothing to win.
Yeah.
And I'm reminded of the colonel, Harry Summers was his name. He was in Vietnam, and he was sent to Hanoi to negotiate the final withdrawal of U.S. troops in the spring of 1975. And he made the mistake of saying to General Two, his opposite number, North Vietnamese infantry colonel he was, he said, Colonel Chu, you have to admit that you never beat us in a pitched battle. And you know what Chu said? He said, Colonel Summers, you may be correct, but what you said is also irrelevant. And that's the thing. It's just completely irrelevant in a guerrilla war, in a occupation that cannot possibly subdue a populace that is dead set against it.
Ken in Sacramento joins us listening to 1240 Talk City. Hello, Ken. You're on the air with Peter B. and Ray McGovern.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi, Ken.
This is a question about institutionalized sadistic behavior. My fear is that Bush has opened up a window into very sadistic behavior, particularly for white, scared, middle-class men in this country, and I see it across the spectrum. I was wondering whether you guys see this, too. Is it institutionalized? And if so, how do we begin to move beyond this? I'm really afraid we may not be able to.
I'm glad you raised this, Ken, and I think Barack Obama has spoken about this. And
that's
talked
where the question
about,
comes from, absolutely.
Yeah, the need to change the whole mindset, Ray?
Right.
Well, unfortunately, there's a whole generation now, more than 1 million of our soldiers, that have been exposed to this mindset. And they need to be cared for. They need to be brought home, respected, but also talked to and given the best possible care to get them out of the PTSD that they suffer. The other thing is simply that we have to be mindful of not only Bush, but Cheney. And if you look at the way they smirk and they laugh when they talk about the dark side and this kind of thing, we have to be mindful that these people, with their records known, and I'm talking not only about branding pledges, but also blowing up little frogs with firecrackers when he was a kid, that's the kind of thing on a record that an application would disqualify you for employment in the FBI, the CIA, any other government, because that is an indication of violence.
Ray McGovern, we have to take a break. Stay with us. Barbara Lee, the congresswoman from Oakland, is going to join us next on the Peter B. Collins Show, live from Washington, D.C.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood Files, sponsored in part by Franklin Templeton Investments, worldwide investing through the eyes of experience for over 50 years. Franklin Templeton Investments gain from their perspective. I'm Charles Osgood. At his adopted home in Sri Lanka, the visionary scientist and science fiction writer Arthur C. Clarke has died at the age of 90. There are many ways in which Clarke was different.
One of the things that set him apart from most others is his scientific background. He was a scientist.
In fact, in 1945, he devised what is now called Clarke's Orbit.
Arthur conceived the idea of the geosynchronous satellite to communicate by radio or television or electronic signals of any kind across the entire planet Earth.
The man himself, after this.
Taking care of business, Office Depot.
Don't let your message get lost in the crowd. Office Depot takes care of that with 49-cent color copy to make sure your work stands out. Only at Office Depot will Xerox-certified print specialists bring the proven power of color to your message in presentations, brochures, flyers, and more. So hurry into Office Depot today and get your business noticed. Office Depot, taking care of business with 49-cent color copies. Valid for letter and legal-size single-sided copies on up to 28-pound paper stock.
A wine is only as good as the vineyards it comes from. For Cabot, America's favorite Pinot Grigio, that means grapes grown in northern Italy, where Cabot gets its light, crisp taste. Not surprisingly, Cabot's distinctive Pinot Noir is also America's favorite. So when you're looking for a truly exceptional wine, white or red, Cabot is the perfect choice.
The number one Italian wine in America, the Cabot Collection, elevating life. Try Cabot Riesling, the luscious, flavorful addition to the Cabot Collection. Imported by Palm Bay International, Boca Raton, Florida.
Of the more than 100 books written by Arthur C. Clarke on space, science, and the future, by far the best known is the one written simultaneously as a novel and screenplay with director Stanley Kubrick, that Clarke himself called 2001, A Space Odyssey. To the day he died, Clarke had no doubt that life exists elsewhere in the universe.
I'd like to see some evidence of extraterrestrial life. I've always believed that we're not alone in the universe, but we're still waiting for E.T. to call us.
Clarke created E.T. and all the other characters in that book and movie. He was so happy to have lived at the dawn of the space age.
We've discovered more about Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, their fantastic moons, than I ever dreamed I would know in my own lifetime.
But we've only just begun, he said.
Over the next 50 years, thousands of people will travel to Earth orbit and then to the moon and beyond.
Arthur C. Clarke, dead at 90. The Osgood File. Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale here to tell you about Monta Vista Wine and Spirits on Soledad Drive in Monterey. It's family-owned for over 40 years. They have all the best wines. It's the real deal. With a high-end liquor selection, it's all there. And if you have a special request, they'll take care of it for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is open every day 9 to 9. Call ahead. Your order will be waiting for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, 19 Soledad Drive by Del Monte Center in Monterey. Reminds you to please drink responsibly.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in Soquel Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in a friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive and Porter Street in Soquel.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
We continue our live broadcast from Washington, D.C. It's 33 minutes after the hour. Ray McGovern is still with us, former CIA officer, the guy who briefed President Reagan with the Presidential Daily Brief, and a sharp critic of our administration these days. He's also a co-founder of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. And joining us now by telephone is a voice that we must hear here on the ignominious fifth anniversary of Bush's shock and awe invasion of Iraq. She is Congresswoman Barbara Lee, Democrat from Oakland, and a founding member of the Out of Iraq Caucus. Congresswoman, thank you for joining us today.
Good to be with you under these unfortunate circumstances.
Indeed, indeed. And we thank you for your leadership on these many important issues. And Barbara Lee, if I may begin on a positive note, I am encouraged by the way the Congress, the House of Representatives, and the Democrats in particular have hung tough on their principled position on domestic wiretapping. I don't use that euphemism of warrantless wiretapping. It is flatly illegal under the FISA law. The president intentionally broke the law, and the Senate version of the bill is obscene because of the way it immunizes the telephone companies and, by inference, the president and others who made these decisions, and blocks us from ever knowing why wiretapping and eavesdropping began before 9/11 and the actual breadth and depth of the invasion of privacy that is incurred, has occurred on what we think is a rather massive scale. So I want to thank you and the others who have brought some of the weaker brothers and sisters along and held tough on a very important principle issue.
Thank you, Peter. Let me just say, first, I also must applaud the Congressional Progressive Caucus, because early on, we staked out the turf in terms of bottom line. And to her credit, the Speaker and his credit, the Chairman of the Judiciary Committee, they got it early on. And it was because of their leadership with Congresswoman Woolsey Waters and myself holding firm and other members of the Progressive Caucus that we were able to make sure that we provided the votes so that there would not be this immunity for the telecommunications companies. I remember very well COINTELPRO. And as I said on the floor, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was the victim and his family of warrantless by spying and wiretapping. I, as a person who worked with the Black Panther Party, remember very vividly how my phones were tapped. And so this was a big issue. And I know it was tough for some, but we have to find that balance between national security, domestic security, and the protection of individual civil liberties. And I'm very proud of our Democratic caucus and how we came together, unified under the Speaker's leadership, and refused to cave in to the Senate's demand.
Well, Barbara Lee, can we build on this? I am a little concerned because I am not hearing from the Democratic leadership that there is a concerted effort, as there was last year, and even though the efforts came up short, the leadership tried very hard to rein in the president's spending in Iraq and, in turn, the policies that leave us in the quagmire, monitoring a civil war and leaving our troops at risk on a daily basis. And yet I don't see the same kind of determination from the leadership and even from Chairman Obie, who last year was talking about not allowing full appropriation bills to come out of his committee. So give us your honest assessment of where things stand, and if there's any way that we as activists can push you and your colleagues to keep the pressure on and not just wait for next year.
Sure, and I am a member of the Appropriations Committee with Chairman Obie, and this year, just like last year, I'm going to push for, one, to end the funding for the occupation and for combat operations, but two, to fully fund redeployment. And what that means is we're not talking about cutting the funding from our young men and women who are in harm's way. We want to make sure that they're protected and that they are provided a way home quickly and safely, as well as our contractors. And so the Lee Amendment, which we, of course, did not get a rule for to debate on the floor last year, I'm going to push it forward again for the option, rather than giving the president the money to continue with the combat operations, to say the only way you will get another dime is fully fund redeployment. We have 94 members who signed a letter to the president saying they would not vote for one more dime for combat operations. And so we're building on what we began last year. And trust me, we're waiting for the supplemental. We're working on a variety of strategies. Our leadership is aware of that, and we've got to hear more from the American people. It's too quiet out there. You know, as Congressman John Lewis says, we need to hear some noise. We've got to make some noise. So the American people need to be very focused on this next go-round in the funding and start those emails and letters and contacting their members of Congress and saying, no, do not provide one more dime for this war. Provide the money to bring our troops home in a responsible in a safe and in an expeditious fashion.
Congresswoman Barbara Lee is with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Also with me in the studio is Ray McGovern, former CIA officer. Ray, a comment or a question for the Congresswoman?
Well, I can't avoid the occasion to express my unbounded admiration for Congresswoman Lee. Many people don't remember how she voted a lone vote against giving the president the authority to go ahead and make war. She was the only one, and she is an archetypical example of the gutsy women. Congresswoman Woolsey, Congresswoman Waters, maybe Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi. Who knows? Maybe there's backbone building there. But the admiration I have has no bounds, and I hope that the male colleagues can join in here and show some gumption. The surge will be advertised now as the be-all and end-all. The surge is nothing more than a delaying tactic so that Cheney and Bush could exit this town without having definitively lost the war. The war is lost. All my military intelligence colleagues hold no hope for any kind of win. And so the question is, how about a responsible withdrawal, as Congresswoman Lee just said? Not a precipitous, not a rapid, not a premature, just a genuine, orderly, gradual withdrawal. And that's what needs to happen, not next year, okay? Not next year. It's got to happen now. And the only way to do that is for our elected representatives to exercise the power of the purse, which the Constitution gave them. And if they can't do it now, I despair of them ever doing it.
Congressman, your reaction?
Well, first, thank you for your kind words and your support. And let me just say, I understood then, as I understood then now, that there's no way the Congress should authorize any president to use force against an unspecified enemy for an unspecified period of time against an unspecified country. In essence, that was a blank check that was provided to the Bush administration to use force in perpetuity, unless we go back and repeal that. And I don't know how we're going to do that. And so there was no way I could go along with that. And our country was in mourning. We remember those terrible, terrible days. And it's no way that we should do anything that's going to make our country less secure. And in fact, it's very important to remind the public that 9/11, Al-Qaeda was responsible for 9/11, not Saddam Hussein in Iraq. And this fear-mongering and this trying to convince people that Iraq is part of this response to 9/11 is just downright deceitful.
And Congresswoman Dick Cheney was at it again this week in Baghdad, misconstruing a connection, a link. He keeps talking about a link between Al-Qaeda and 9/11. And it's so pervasive that John McCain got mixed up on his little photo op tour of Iraq as he could not keep straight Al-Qaeda and Shia-based Iranian operatives who are believed to be in Iraq. And this is the kind of disinformation and misinformation that is not only damaging to the American people who buy this stuff, but we see that our leaders appear to be in full denial and buying into it.
Very dangerous. It's very disingenuous. And, in fact, when Secretary of State Colin Powell went to the United Nations, I felt really bad for him because he knew that there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And why in the world they would run him up there and have him put forth his presentation to justify the authorization to use force boggles my mind. I don't know if you remember, but during that time, I had an amendment that was an alternative to the Bush use of force against Iraq. And what it said was, look, just let the UN inspections continue with their course. That will determine whether there are weapons of mass destruction. Well, the House of Representatives, of course, could not go along with that because they wanted to continue with this preemptive military strike, and only 72 members voted for my resolution. But in retrospect, many members say now that's what we should have done. And so I'm very worried about John McCain and this administration and what they're going to do next, because the drumbeat against Iran is certainly beating very loud. And so given the fact that we've given the Bush administration the authority to use force, who knows where they go next? And we have to stop them. People need to raise their voices, hit the streets, put the streets in on, get involved in these elections, And we need to end this regime in Washington, D.C. very quickly.
Now, Congresswoman Lee, you know, I have great respect for the Speaker, and I know her fairly well. And in the interest of full disclosure, I once worked as a campaign consultant for her. But I do not read her as determined to use her power to stop funding for the war. She has made too many comments about how we will never cut off funding for the troops. And that's buying into the language and framing of the Bush administration in a way that I find infuriating. But the bottom line is, I don't have an indication that Nancy Pelosi is willing to take the firm stand in this election year and cut off funding for this war.
Well, I think the Speaker has done a phenomenal job, and no one wants to cut off funding for the troops. And every time I hear that, I respond, that's not what I am saying. I know that's not what Congresswoman Woolsey and Waters are saying. We're talking about using the funding to protect our troops and to bring them home, begin a responsible and safe redeployment. I think that the Speaker wants this to happen. I have heard her speak about a fully funded redeployment. There have been several bills passed, one of which was last fall, that we received most of the Democratic caucus support for, and that was in essence when the 50 billion supplemental came up. We negotiated the language for that $30 billion, and it was not, or $50 billion, it was not given the president that money for an occupation. What we did was, in essence, create the Lee Amendment, or a variation of the Lee Amendment that said, okay, this $50 billion will only be used for specific purposes, and those purposes were, for the most part, to begin a responsible and safe redeployment. So I think the Speaker has definitely showed leadership. You know, she has a caucus that she has to pull together and keep together and unify, but I have seen her do that, and I'm very hopeful that she will continue to move the ball forward.
All right. Congresswoman, earlier today, the president went to the Pentagon and once again misused our troops as a photo op backdrop. And he offered this glowing and misleading account of how we got there and where we are today. Let's listen to a quick soundbite from Bush.
We've learned through hard experience what happens when we pull our forces back too fast. The terrorists and extremists step in. They fill vacuums, establish safe havens, and use them to spread chaos and carnage.
Now, this is, again, dissembling on the part of the president, because he fails to point out that we didn't secure the borders of this country when we invaded it, and the terrorists and other foreign fighters who have come in are a factor. But they they're deeply exaggerated in the account from the administration, because the Sunni-Shia conflicts and those who are struggling to settle scores of the past and jockey for position for the future are, you know, the true causes of the violence in Iraq today. And to me, al-Qaeda and these foreign fighters are a relatively minor issue.
Oliver, we have said, and many have said, Pentagon experts, military experts have said there is no military solution to this occupation of Iraq. This is an occupation. It's a civil war. How in the world can U.S. troops referee a civil war? How in the world can we maintain a presence there and expect our troops and America to be safe? And, you know, we have been trying over and over again to provide a policy of no permanent military base in Iraq. And let me say, I think the administration and Senator McCain, they want a military base there. They want a presence there, like I think Senator McCain said, for about 100 years.
Yeah.
This is unacceptable. The president has signed into law at least 6 times my language that says the U.S. has no desire, nor will it build permanent military bases, nor have any dibs on the oil. He actually issued a signing statement on the defense authorization bill this past December. And if you can believe this, I can believe it. Thinking about it more. He actually took that provision out of the defense authorization bill and issued a signing statement on it. So I say, let's get ready to go to court, Mr. Bush, because you are completely violating the law. The Iraqis don't want us there with a permanent military presence. The United States cannot afford to have a permanent military presence there. We're spending $500 billion. You talked about an Iraq recession. That's what this recession needs to be. Look, people are suffering out there. You know, the economic downturn has created havoc in people's lives. Yes, the foreclosure crisis. Yes, some of the stock market decline. You know, many of the other issues. But when you look at the fact that we're going to spend up to $3 trillion on the occupation of Iraq, you can't tell me this is not part of the reason right. that the American people are suffering.
We're going to take a break. I'm sorry. We're going to take a break and return with Congresswoman Barbara Lee, and I'll just amend her comment there that the president, in his speech today, argued with unnamed critics about the cost of the war. He said recent estimates have been way too high, but, of course, he offered no figure of his own. We take a break and return here on the Peter B. Collins Show, talking with Democratic Congresswoman Barbara Lee and Ray McGovern in the studio with me here in Washington, D.C. More in a moment on the Peter B. Collins Show. Wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. To experience one-of-a-kind dishes, don't forget the weekly specials. The Mexicali Grill is open Monday through Saturday for lunch until 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Hi, I'm Ginger.
And I'm Jay. And we'd like to personally invite you to our family restaurant, A Pizza Paradise.
Try one of our signature pizzas or calzones, such as Jamaican Me Crazy or Wild Mushroom Dreams.
We also offer sandwiches, salads, rice plates, and irresistible homemade desserts by Ginger.
So come relax in our tropical surf-themed restaurant and top off your meal with draft beer from Kona Brewing Company, fresh brewed Hawaiian coffee, or Lappert's ice cream.
Located in the Marina Village Center at 215 Reservation Road in Marina. We have been recognized by Monterey County food critics Mike Hill and Melissa Snyder as locals' favorite, best for families, and much more.
Call 582-9149 or visit our website at apizzaparadise.net.
It's a pizza paradise where your pizzas are bigger, better, and bolder.
That's 582-9149.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show live from Washington, D.C. My producer, Katrina Rill, is doing a fabulous job. She's here with me in Washington. And Brian Urban is at the controls in the Bay Area. Thank you, Brian. Ray McGovern is here in the studio with me, and we're talking with Congresswoman Barbara Lee. And, Barbara, in the initial segment, you made a comment I wanted to follow up on because there are numerous actions that were planned by protesters in Washington and in many other parts of the country today, some of them scheduled for later in the day. But I was at Lafayette Park in front of the White House around lunchtime, and while I applaud the Iraq Veterans Against the War and Vets for Peace, only 100 people joined them as they delivered a citizen's arrest to Bush and Cheney for this illegal war. And I want to ask you honestly what you think we need to do to re-galvanize the American people. I'm concerned that they're buying the Bush message that the surge is working and that they are relaxing.
I don't think that they're buying the fact that the surge is working or relaxing. I think, and I've talked to many organizations about their strategy, about the economics of what's taking place. You know, so many people now are just struggling to survive, so of course the economy is on everyone's mind. But I think when you look at the huge turnout in these elections, and of course I have to say I'm a Senator Obama supporter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm his Western Region co-chair. And when you look at people voting and what they're saying through their votes, I think that's a referendum, really, on George Bush's policies and on us coming to grips with ending this occupation of Iraq. But I think people need to rev it up a bit. They need to put up, you know, put forth the streets a little bit more, and they need to hit the streets, march, rally. And, you know, sometimes I get a little disappointed we don't see the outpouring of that we don't see people agitating enough. But I think that the elections and what we're seeing out there in terms of the huge turnout for the polls really do tell me that this is on everyone's mind, and that this is a referendum, and that we will vote to bring in a new president and end this occupation.
Ray McGovern, one more question, please, for Congresswoman Lee.
Yes, Congresswoman Lee, I just want to ask you what the realistic expectation is now for the next coming months.
In terms of the supplemental or what?
Yeah, we're talking about last year where Murtha and Obi both said they wouldn't move an appropriations bill forward.
Yeah.
Do you think there's any chance that they could follow the example of those who hung tough on the eavesdropping?
Well, we're certainly working hard with them. Like I say, I'm on the Appropriations Committee, and I know everyone's concerns, but I think that people understand and recognize that we have to end this. And realistically, you know, sometimes I say it's an uphill battle, but I think I think you'll hear more, you know, voices coming from Capitol Hill this year about why we need to end this.
Well, we certainly wish you luck in your efforts toward that end, and Congressman Woolsey, Congresswoman Woolsey, and Congresswoman Waters as well, and all the other people who are hanging tough. It's really important that we get started this year, it seems to me, because if we let it slough over until after the election.
Thank you very much. It's important for people, though. I think it's the hands, you know, it's the power of the people, once again, making sure their members of Congress do the right
thing.
Well,
Congresswoman Lee, thanks for spending time with us today. I hope your table comes up next. And I understand you had some surgery recently, and I hope you have a quick recovery.
No, that's Congresswoman Woolsey. She's doing fine, though. She's doing great.
Oh, okay. I got that mixed up.
Yeah. No, she's doing great.
All right. Barbara Lee speaks for me. Thank you very much.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Congresswoman Lee is amazing, Ray. And I wish that we could see much more like her. And I did see a glimpse. Donna Edwards won an upset victory over Al Wynn, a 8-term incumbent pro-war Democrat from Maryland. And she is well on her way to a seat in the House. Yesterday, an interesting scene as I was interviewing her, John Conyers had to wiggle through the crowd there. And he leaned into the microphone and just said how much he is looking forward to having a stalwart progressive like Donna Edwards join him in the Congress. And we need to get people active and involved in these elections this year. And not just the House, we need a Senate that can get us past 60 votes and really put us on track.
Well, you know, when I remember what Congresswoman Lee said to those who said, how did you summon the courage to be the only one, the only person to vote against that war, giving George Bush the authority to do war? She said, I came out of that National Cathedral that day, and I said to myself, you know, this just isn't right. And for someone who's been through, as she explained, with the Black Panthers and others, Coquetel Impro, you get a certain sense of justice there. You get a certain sense of right and wrong. And the fact that she was the only one then speaks volumes. But now I think there is hope that some of her colleagues in the Democratic Party will have the backbone to realize that the Constitution is much more important than the election and move forward not only against the funding but also toward impeachment.
That's right. And the oath of office is to support and defend the Constitution. That is their primary responsibility, and frankly, they have been failing us on that, Ray. Always a pleasure to talk with you, Ray. Great to see you in person. I hope you have a quick recovery, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Thanks very much.
Ray McGovern. McGovern here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Melanie Sloan is joining us next here in Washington, D.C. Stay tuned. We're talking with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. Veronique, you started the company more than 30 years ago, and was it partly because you were getting headaches from wine?
Absolutely. I'm an extremely chemically sensitive person. There were no wines, no conventionally grown wines that I could really drink and enjoy until I accidentally tasted my grandfather's wine and discovered to my extreme surprise that I could drink those wines without getting headaches. More and more people suffer the results of the accumulation of toxic substances in our environment, and our tolerance is getting really strained, and therefore it takes a very little amount of a toxic substance for them to start have an unpleasant experience.
Learn more about the Organic Wine Company on the web at ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE. Toll free, that's 1-888-ECO-WINE. Tell them Peter B. sent you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself. The fifth anniversary.
Battle in Iraq has been longer and harder and more costly than we anticipated. But it is a fight we must win.
From Arkansas to Ohio.
We have continued areas of flooding.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. 5 years ago, it was shock and awe as U.S. bombs and missiles rained down on Baghdad. Since then, nearly 4,000 American troops have died in Iraq. Billions and billions of dollars have been spent. And while the troop surge has helped stabilize the country, Iraq is far from peaceful and secure.
I'm Cammie McCormick. General David Petraeus said by phone from Baghdad there is an enormous amount of work ahead in Iraq.
The progress in Iraq is fragile. It is tenuous.
In Baghdad, though security has improved,
there are countless fault lines, in some cases micro fault lines. It's not as if there's only Sunni to the west and all Shia to the east and that the killing has stopped because there's a wall between them.
And as for al-Qaeda in Iraq,
it remains capable of lashing out at any given time.
And that's why he says he hasn't decided yet whether to recommend a pause in troop withdrawals after the summer.
Today, the president who launched the war made a speech to mark its anniversary.
Addressing a Pentagon audience that included the Joint Chiefs of Staff, President Bush conceded the war he launched half a decade ago has been fought at a high price in American lives and treasure. But he repeatedly made the case that it was the right thing to do.
Because we acted, the world is better and the United States of America is safer.
While admitting the war has lasted longer and been harder than anticipated, Mr. Bush renewed his determination to stay in Iraq until victory is achieved. Mark Miller, CBS News, The White House.
I'm Barry Bagnato in Washington, where demonstrations ranged from the unruly...
We don't want your oil war!
...to the reverent.
Thomas Mullen Adams, Navy Lieutenant.
Names of war dead being recited as a procession of protesters in white death masks marched from Arlington Cemetery. At IRS headquarters, more than 30 were arrested, denouncing the use of taxpayer money for the war. Police dragged demonstrators off a street outside the American Petroleum Institute, making a statement without making much of a difference. The story of the anti-war movement these 5 years, frustrating protester Eric Romsted admits.
If the government doesn't want to change, it's hard for us to force something.
His war, too, goes on. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
Now this.
Wondering when it's the right time for service? Your Hummer knows. With Oil Life Monitor, OnStar Vehicle Diagnostics, and a complete service schedule in every owner's manual. And when it's time, head down the Goodwrench service lane for an oil change, tire rotation, and a Goodwrench multi-point vehicle inspection.
Can't stop thinking about it.
See your Hummer Goodwrench dealer today or log on to Goodwrench.com. Diagnostic capabilities vary by model. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations. Goodwrench and go. We're keeping it simple.
Taking care of business, Office Depot.
Need great deals for your home or office? Then hurry into Office Depot today. Office Depot has lowered prices on hundreds of items throughout the store. So don't wait any longer to stock up on a wide assortment of office supplies and furniture at new low prices. Plus, with the Office Depot low price guarantee, if you find an identical product advertised for less at a competitor, Office Depot will match that price. Guaranteed. Office Depot. Taking care of business. Certain restrictions apply. See store for details.
It's a new audio message from Osama bin Laden, but it's not about the war in Iraq. It's directed at Europe and warns of a response for the publication of drawings he says were insulting to the Prophet Muhammad. It's water where water shouldn't be, flooding homes and roads from Arkansas to Ohio. We checked in with Lieutenant John Hotz of the Missouri Highway Patrol.
Several cities have had evacuations of homes and businesses. We also have approximately 300 state highways that are flooded in one manner or another. There are countless numbers of county roads and city streets that are also flooded.
At least 13 deaths are blamed on the weather. Heavy rain fell on already saturated ground. Much of yesterday's gains on Wall Street were erased by worries that Merrill Lynch might have to take more write-downs and by a plunge in commodity prices. Gold dropped $58 to $944 an ounce, and crude oil fell $5 to $104.48 a barrel. The Dow lost 293 points to close at 12,099. The S&P 500 closed 58 points lower. While the drop in oil prices might help drivers down the road, the damage has already been done to people who heat their homes with oil.
Heating oil prices are now about six times what they were in the January of 2002.
Analyst Peter Butel, the Energy Department, pegs the average price for heating oil at $3.85 a gallon. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
At Mercedes-Benz, our affordable certified pre-owned vehicles come with the rich legacy of engineering that is Mercedes-Benz. And a 155-point inspection, roadside assistance, and a one-year warranty up to 100,000 miles. Every certified pre-owned Mercedes-Benz retains its integrity because, as a company, we have ours. Stop by your local authorized dealer and ask about the certified pre-owned program by Mercedes-Benz.
See dealer for complete details and warranty and roadside assistance. Abbreviated inspection applicable to vehicles less than 15 months old with less than 18,000 miles.
Is Progressive.com an auto insurance utopia? Well, in a typical utopia, you spend hours frolicking in lush green meadows and splashing around in crystal clear waterfalls. But in an auto insurance utopia, you can compare Progressive rates to those of other top companies all in about 8 minutes, leaving you plenty of time for, well, frolicking. Start saving today at Progressive.com or call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. That's Progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, Mayfield Village, Ohio. Prices vary based on how you buy. Comparison rates available in most states and situations.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
We continue our live broadcast from Washington, D.C. We're at the studio that Bill Press does his program out of every morning, and you hear him on all of our favorite affiliate radio stations that carry the Peter B. Collins Show. Coming up later this hour, Mel Goodman will join us. He's another one of those guys who spent years at the Central Intelligence Agency and is now a sharp critic of Bush administration policy. He's published a new book called Failure of Intelligence, The Decline and Fall of the CIA. He knows what he's talking about, and he'll talk with us about a half hour from now. Melanie Sloan is a regular contributor to our program, and I have just met her in person for the first time, and what a pleasure. Hello, Melanie.
Hi, it's so nice to get to put a face with the disembodied voice I hear every week.
Well, I hope it's not too much of a letdown.
No.
Have the face for radio and the hairstyle, too. My Anchorman hair fell out about 20 years ago. But it's great to see you, and you, of course, are the executive director of CREW, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. And we have you for a full half hour today, so I want to open up the phone lines because often in our brief reports we get callers on the line, but I prefer to let you lay out the facts. They may have questions, and so you're welcome to call in this half hour toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. Now, one thread that has run through our conversations over the last couple of years, Melanie, is the failure of the House and Senate ethics committees to do their fundamental jobs. And we saw that they never investigated Duke Cunningham, and he's behind bars. Most of the Abramoff scandal information never made it before the ethics committees. And even on the things where they try to put out a fire in a hurry, like Mark Foley and Larry Craig, the results are very unsatisfying and do not enhance the reputation of either body. And so we talked last week about the House Ethics Reform Bill, sponsored by Michael Capuano of Massachusetts. And a day or two after you and I spoke, I got to spend a half an hour talking with him about the ethics bill. It had passed, and he was basking in momentary glory. And I said, nice try and good first step, but as you had pointed out, this is not worthy of our support at this point because it doesn't allow for outside referrals. And it really just puts a new layer, a screening panel of former legislators to evaluate any referral, but that referral has to come from a current member. So this is not progress.
No, this is not progress. We haven't really changed anything. We've created this new layer of bureaucracy. It's a very rare moment where I find myself agreeing with John Boehner, the House Minority Leader.
Oh, stop.
But that's what he said the other day. Now, he has, of course, zero credibility because the Republicans had control of the House for 12 years and they didn't do anything to, or 10 years to, no, 12, to do anything. And they didn't fix the Ethics Committee. And it was broken under them. And Boehner himself had authority to do something about it. So, you know, take him with a grain of salt. But that said, he's not wrong. It's a new layer of bureaucracy. They haven't changed a thing. Outside groups like CRU still can't file ethics complaints. Only members of Congress can file ethics complaints. What Mr. Capuano and his colleagues will tell you the big difference is now this panel of former members could on their own take up something. But I have no more reason to think that these panel of former members will take up something than that the panel of current members will take up something. In large part, those former members will have the same mindset as members of Congress, which is they need to protect the institution of the Congress at all costs, and they don't want to they don't want there to be endless ethics complaints. They don't want there to be a focus on ethics because it makes them all look bad.
Mm-hmm. Now, some of the comments, including from Democrats, and I have a high regard for Louise Slaughter of New York, who is great on communications issues, media consolidation, and she's very progressive on many fronts. But I saw a quote from her that she fears a witch hunt, that somebody will be able to file a complaint that is completely baseless and some sort of personal vendetta. And I really don't see the basis for that. And I can't imagine that outside referrals to the committee would force their hand. Even a referral doesn't mean that they take any action whatsoever. And to date, they often cloak their non-action. Non-action is not reported. Am I correct?
That's right. Well, first, let me just say also, the best evidence of the fact that this would not be a problem, that there wouldn't be lots of ethics complaints filed for no reason, is the Senate Ethics Committee. Outside groups like mine or any outsider can, in fact, file a complaint with the Senate Ethics Committee, and you do not see endless frivolous ethics complaints filed in the Senate Ethics Committee. So here we have an example, and we don't see this happening. I think this is just an excuse members of Congress use because they don't want outsiders to be able to file. I think I must have told you this before. There was a period where outsiders could file, and we have John Murtha to thank for the fact that we can no longer file. And that was a change in 1997. There was, at that point, a real bipartisan ethics task force that worked in an actual bipartisan fashion, and they came to the floor with a proposal that included allowing outsiders to file. And John Murtha came in and changed the rules so that none of us could file now through 2008, and that's been entrenched since then. And the fact is they don't want us to be able to file because they don't want to then have to investigate or do anything about it. And this way, nobody ever has to investigate.
How was he able to do that when Democrats were in the minority?
Well, it was an amendment that he offered on the floor, and there were enough people who were supportive of it because, really, every member of Congress would rather stop ethics complaints if they can. So if John Murtha was going to offer the amendment, why were the Republicans going to stop him?
Well, and John Murtha has the distinction of making CRU's lists of the most corrupt members of Congress. And while I appreciate his leadership, it's kind of faded now in trying to get our troops out of Iraq and really fighting for the best interests of our soldiers. This guy is a very powerful earmark specialist. Most of his earmarks are in the military budgets, where he has great sway because of his seniority on the committees. And his district in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, gets more pork per square inch than almost any other. I mean, he's very much at the top of most of those lists, including receiving campaign contributions from the aerospace and defense sector that is benefiting from this phony Star Wars missile defense deployment. And so there are a lot of criticisms of John Murtha, and in particular his ethics and some of the muscular moves he's used against his own members to silence them in terms of questioning his earmarks or trying to clean up that process.
Sure. In fact, everybody who gets an earmark from John Murtha is a campaign contributor. Every single one of those defense contractors, in turn, contributes money in return for those earmarks. It is also well known that if you want earmarks from John Murtha, go open a small office in his hometown, and that'll help you get one. He's also contributed earmarked for an alleged nonprofit organization in Pennsylvania that has gotten over $250 million in government earmarks and isn't paying any taxes, and it really just works for the defense industry, not a real nonprofit. In addition, last summer we saw an instance where when somebody had the nerve to question one of John Murtha's earmarks, he threatened them and said, if you threaten my earmark, you will never get another earmark as long as you are in Congress.
Yeah.
That is a firm violation, by the way, of ethics rules. And nobody reported him to the Ethics Committee, obviously, as no one ever does. And the Ethics Committee obviously didn't take up the investigation on its own, even though it's a very clear rule violation. That's the kind of thing Crewe would have filed an ethics complaint against Murtha, could we have? And yet, again, this is an example of why the Ethics Committee is clearly broken.
Melanie Sloan with us in studio, live and in person here in Washington, D.C. You can call us at 888-5-PETER-B. Now, Melanie, one of the other issues that's surfacing here is that presidential candidate Barack Obama has disclosed his own earmarks, and some of them are a little embarrassing. One of the funding requests went to the public hospital where his wife works in Chicago. Now, I give him credit for doing that. There could be momentary embarrassment, but he does seem to have the instinct, at least, I don't know how deep it goes, to try to clean up the earmark process, and he has an unlikely ally, at least from the State of the Union message, in President Bush.
Yeah, well, John, I mean, President Bush isn't credible either, because President Bush only doesn't like earmarks now that they're Democratic earmarks, and he liked them just fine while they were all Republican earmarks. So again, you got to look at the source. We think there is a big problem with earmarks here in Washington, and is under Republican rule that, and I don't have statistics in front of me, unfortunately, but they've increased, you know, like several 100% over the past 10 years. And it is often for things not like public hospitals, but my favorite was former Representative Charles Taylor from North Carolina had an earmark for a teapot museum in his hometown. There are small theaters. There are all sorts of very local issues that, you know, sure, they might well be worthy of money, but why is it that's the best use of our federal taxpayer dollars? We're not paying for infrastructure. We're paying for a teapot museum.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty partial to teapots, but even I object to that.
Yeah.
Melanie Sloan is with us here. Why don't we take our break now, and I want to come back and talk about some sex scandals and some comparative hypocrisy. Melanie Sloan from Crewe, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics, is our guest. I'm Peter B. Collins in Washington, D.C. Here comes the music. We'll head into a break and return. If you want to join us, lines are open at 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372 puts you through to the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Mm-hmm. Jim Moore Income Tax in Watsonville has been helping Monterey Bay Area residents with personal income tax preparation for more than 20 years. And this year, Manager Juan Gonzalez is prepared to assist all taxpayers take advantage of tax credits and rebates especially targeted for the eco-minded. The staff of Jim Moore Income Tax specializes in fast professional income tax preparation at a very reasonable price. Do you have a knotty tax problem? Let Juan Gonzalez and his staff provide the expert assistance you need. Jim Moore Income Tax is located at 30 Alexander Street in downtown Watsonville, just two blocks from the Central Plaza. This year, let Juan Gonzalez show you where the green is for green living taxpayers. Visit Jim Moore Income Tax at 30 Alexander Street in downtown Watsonville. Be sure to take copies of your 2006 tax return and all of your 2007 W-2s and 1099s. Remember Jim Moore Income Tax for all of your tax preparation needs.
Beyond Wheat Artisan Bakery, right here in Monterey, brings you sugar-free and gluten-free muffins and cakes that are all natural, with organic ingredients and loaded with super grain nutrition. Find Beyond Wheat at Whole Foods Market in Monterey and Cornucopia Community Market in Carmel. Be sure to try Beyond Wheat for a truly special treat, created to keep you happy and totally guilt-free. You'll be so glad you did.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, authentic, inexpensive Chinese food prepared to order every day. Make this the year you become personally acquainted with the May family and Jim's Restaurant at 1584 Del Monte in Seaside. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.50 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget, Jim's is tops for takeout and catering, too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Good afternoon. Checking traffic on KRXA, and we do have a problem. Highway 9 at the San Lorenzo Valley High School. An earlier crash with major injuries, a vehicle and a pedestrian involved. Emergency crews may still be off to the shoulder conducting an investigation. Heads up, northbound 17 after Ocean Street in Santa Cruz. We had reports of a bicyclist riding close to the roadway there. 17 itself currently checks in Stalin, accident-free, though. Summit Road at Morrell Road, we had reports of an accident. Vehicle took down a mailbox and has a smashed windshield. That's off to the side with CHP on the scene. Highway 68, so far so good. We've had no problems this afternoon. And road work continues in Santa Cruz northbound 1. It has the Emmeline Avenue off-ramp shut down until this summer. That may cause delays. This report is brought to you by Carfax. A flood-damaged car is like a ticking time bomb. Nearly half of these flooded cars get fixed up and resold. You want to avoid them? Ask your dealer for a free Carfax vehicle history report or go to Carfax.com. If you spot a traffic problem, give us a call, 415-901-7990. And that's traffic on KRXA.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm in Washington, D.C. One more day, back in the Bay Area tomorrow. Melanie Sloan is with us from CRU, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. I hope you've been to their website. It's citizensforethics.org, and they spell out the four, F-O-R. Melanie, the sex scandals just keep on coming. We had Elliot Spitzer, the mayor of Detroit, Kwame Kilpatrick. Their cell phone traffic and instant messages have gotten them in big trouble. Now the new governor of New York, the day he took office, revealed that both he and his wife had extramarital affairs. And I, for one, am not too interested in the sex lives of politicians. And while there are now lines outside the Mayflower Hotel here to somehow soak up the sordid Spitzer saga, there are deeper issues here. And one thing I want to ask you about is if you think that this this exposure of Elliot Spitzer's extracurricular activities is all on the up and up. Many people suspect that this could be part of the politicization of the U.S. attorneys, and that while he contributed the evidence that gave us these, you know, tabloid stories and led to his resignation, some of us still have questions about the origins of the investigation.
Well, I think, first of all, Elliot Spitzer really is responsible for his own downfall. And if somebody wants to avoid that kind of thing, they have to avoid the illegal conduct in the first place. You don't want to give people ammunition against you. And there are just so many people who were ecstatic, really, to see Elliot Spitzer go. So he had to know people would be gunning for him, basically.
Mm-hmm.
That said, though, he also should have been aware that the way he was conducting these transactions, the way he was using the money, would, in fact, be a tip-off. And it wasn't that the IRS was tipped. The way it started was really that the banks are the ones who started the whole thing rolling.
Yeah.
And that's because by law they were required to notify the IRS of any questionable transactions.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that the government came in starting at Elliot Spitzer. The banks, who really had no interest in Elliot Spitzer, I mean, this is all computer-generated, in fact, they would have been the ones to tip off the government. And there is a higher level of concern with political officials, because you always worry that there are bribery issues. So
mm-hmm.
it takes a little less to start an investigation into that, or for these banks to be to start on that path. So that's one thing. And then the IRS agents looked at it, and then I think that they thought, when they were first starting to look at it, they were wondering if they were in fact going to find bribery. And then it just turned out that they ended up finding out that this was about the Emperor's Club. Now,
mm-hmm.
one can certainly question the amount of money that was spent when they, you know, sent agents to stake out the Mayflower Hotel once they realized it seemed to be about prostitution and it wasn't about bribery. Should they have been spending so much money and resources on such a case?
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, the way it started doesn't seem to me really very questionable. It seems like it was all on the up and up initially.
But at a certain point, he was identified as a high profile or a political figure, and that means that Attorney General Mukasey had to be notified about this. So there was at least awareness at the highest levels of the Justice Department, we can presume.
Oh, yeah, we can absolutely presume. And I believe that Mukasey has said that he did know. But a lot of it would have been done by the U.S. Attorney's Office in New York. They are known to be a very aggressive U.S. Attorney's Office, and they like high-profile cases. So they're happy. You know, any time you have an opportunity as a U.S. attorney in the prosecutor's office to go after a high-level political official, that's pretty attractive. And so I'm not at all surprised that they went after Elliot Spitzer as hard as they did. And again, Elliot Spitzer gave people the ammunition. It is very hard for me to feel bad for him when he was so brazenly breaking the Mann Act. Now, it's another question about whether he'll ever be prosecuted for that, because that is such an unusual crime to be prosecuted for.
Right.
But this is a man who both was obviously aware of that law and yet has a prostitute get on a train to cross state lines for purposes of a sexual act, and also knows about the financial transactions. He knows all of the things he's doing that are illegal and could cause people to look at him. He also came down very hard on prostitution in his own job.
Yeah.
So it seems to me that it's really all in Spitzer's lap, so to speak.
Senator David Vitter of Louisiana is a Republican, and he was on the D.C. Madams list, and he's managed to hold on to his seat. He, in some ways, seems to be some kind of an absurd hero to the Republican caucus. And over the weekend, he finally made some comments. But he is not willing to face the music in the same way that Elliot Spitzer did. And we don't know if he did anything that was interstate. There are reports of the D.C. Madam, and also that he patronized prostitutes in New Orleans. What do you think he should do, and what should we do to promote your idea?
Well, I certainly think that David Vitter ought to have been under investigation by the Senate Ethics Committee. I have found it outrageous for a very long time that the Ethics Committee took a pass on David Vitter while they went so hard after Larry Craig. And I'm not saying Larry Craig didn't deserve the investigation and subsequent admonishment. He certainly did, or censure. But so did David Vitter. And you can't treat them so differently. I thought it was very funny last week when the National Republican Congressional Campaign Committee came out and said, oh, it's so outrageous that people got money from Elliot Spitzer, or they have to return the money. And we thought, well, how is it that you have to return Elliot Spitzer's money and you don't actually have to return David Vitter's money? How are the Republicans talking about this?
Mm-hmm.
This seemed pretty outrageous. So we posted, and we've said very clearly that if the money comes from a politician, and it doesn't seem like the money was involved in wrongdoing, it wasn't accumulated in some illegal way,
right,
I don't see why the contribution is necessarily tainted. No one's saying that Elliot Spitzer's campaign contributions somehow derived from or related to prostitution, so
mm-hmm.
I don't think they should have been returned. But no one's saying that about David Vitter either. But if, you know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander, if you're going to say you can't take the Spitzer money, then you clearly can't take the Vitter money either. David Vitter now talking about the situation, saying the two are remarkably different, and he says people who don't think they're different are just people who don't agree with him on things like immigration and other things.
Oh, gosh. Let's change the subject, he said. And speaking of changing the subject, just a minute remaining. Here on page 2 of the Washington Post today, an update that a judge has given the White House 3 days to cough up the emails that you have been fighting for.
Yes. Well, it seems that the federal magistrate judge is now concerned that, in fact, the White House has not saved any of the emails that they were supposed to be saving, despite a preservation order that issued a few months ago. So now the White House has a couple of days left, two more days, but it'll be Monday by the time, because they don't count weekends.
Mm-hmm.
They'll have to come in and explain why they shouldn't have to save basically every hard drive in the entire White House shouldn't have to be backed up and copied at this point.
Mm-hmm. And who will the White House have to turn this over to? The judge or to you, the plaintiff?
They'd have to turn them over to the judge. I don't know if we would have access to them or not. There's a lot of details to be worked out here.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem right now is that the White House may be destroying everything.
And you're going to have to read all that stuff if you get it?
Wouldn't I just enjoy the opportunity to do that?
Melanie Sloan, great to meet you. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
And check out the website, citizensforethics.org. Mel Goodman's going to join us next, former CIA officer and the author of a new book about the decline and fall of the Central Intelligence Agency. That's next on the Peter B. Collins Show from Washington, D.C.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
To stay is to win. To leave is to lose. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. Today, we pause in the discussion of which Christian preacher screams loudest to remind you that the war in Iraq is still on. It began 5 years, $600 billion, and almost 4,000 American lives ago. And today, we can say two things. That in light of the recent repeat visits of Senator McCain and Vice President Cheney, Baghdad has become our politicians' favorite city to sneak into. And violence is down.
The areas where the ethnic cleansing took place are now clean. People are in there among their own kind. There's nobody left to kill.
Whatever works. And the president reminded us today that the only defeat would be to withdraw, which is why we will stay, to ensure that the victory that we've been winning for 5 years can continue to be won. The alternative is quite simply America's destruction.
The terrorist movement could emerge emboldened with new recruits, new resources. To allow this to happen would be to ignore the lessons of September the 11th, a day in which 19 armed men with box cutters killed nearly 3,000 people on our soil.
That was today. This was 5 years ago.
Imagine those 19 hijackers with other weapons and other plans, this time armed by Saddam Hussein. Take one vial, one canister, one crate, slipped into this country to bring a day of horror like none we have ever known.
5 years, 600 billion, 4,000 lives, same threat, which is why we must stay in Iraq and continue winning. Now this.
Computer security threats such as spam, spyware, viruses, and hackers invade your business every day through email, instant messaging, web browsing, and your company's website. With no software to install and no per-user license fees, Barracuda Network firewalls are easy to set up and affordable. Do what 50,000 other companies have done. Reclaim your network with a Barracuda Network firewall. For a free evaluation unit, call Barracuda Networks, 888-ANTI-SPAM, 888-ANTI-SPAM, or go online to barracuda.com.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last 4 decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays, 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
I'm trying to find the writer who wrote that copy. I am your humble host, Peter B. Collins, 33 minutes after the hour. We continue our final live broadcast, this time from Washington, D.C. I'll be back in California tomorrow. And we are originating from the studio where Bill Press does his daily radio show. And here on the desk is Bill's newest book. It's called Trainwreck, The End of the Conservative Revolution and Not a Moment Too Soon. I haven't cracked it yet, but I love the title. And we'll certainly talk to Bill about it. I think it's due for publication in a week or so. And so he should be on a book tour at that time, and we'll get to talk with him. Melvin A. Goodman joins us on the Peter B. Collins Show. Melvin A., how are you?
How are you, Peter B.?
I'm delighted to see
you. It's good to be in the same studio with you.
Yeah, we always talk on the phone, and you have to put up with low volumes and all kinds of weird things that happen.
But tonight I had to put up with putting on shoes. I don't have to do that in my kitchen.
Well, hold them up there. I want to see your shoes.
Have shoes.
And by the way, tell me about your pastor. We're asking everyone about their pastor and just what embarrasses you about
my
your pastor.
My pastor's on YouTube regularly. there have been sex scandals we just can't talk about on the air. But that's what organized religion is for, isn't it?
I guess so.
That's why Stephen Colbert did his segment in front of the cathedral in New York last night.
Uh-huh.
So we're all in trouble.
You know, I have to say, one of the problems of being on the road, if for some reason hotel video systems don't include the Comedy Central channel. And so I am delinquent. I'll have to catch up this weekend if my TiVo's been working.
It's just not pornographic enough, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, there were plenty of light porn channels available, but I couldn't get Colbert or Stewart. Well, Mel, on a more serious note, this is an ignominious day. It is the fifth anniversary of the so-called shock and awe invasion, Bush's elective adventure in Iraq that has led to this protracted occupation. And it was remarkable. The spinmeisters worked overtime to write the speech that he delivered, once again with the Pentagon as a backdrop to try to build up the perceptions of this man as a military leader. And it wasn't shocking to me, but to hear the dissembling, the litany of lies, his carefully scrubbed version of the history and origins of all this, and his dubious current assessment of the situation, it all made me want to, frankly, puke. And CNN offered no commentary, no criticism. There was no post-commentary where somebody said, you know, on some of those things, he might have gilded the lily or hyped it up just an itty bit.
Well, here is the most profligate decision any American president has made in the field of national security. Here is a decision that I remember well. I was on the National War College faculty when the military came parading over before the war began to tell us what it would cost, $5 to $10 billion, to tell us how long troops would be in Iraq, 12 to 18 months, to tell us about the ease of the post-war situation in turning over the government to Ahmad
Chalabi,
mm-hmm. Who was, of course, Donald Rumsfeld's man in Baghdad.
$300,000 a month.
And here we are 5 years later, and we used lies to get into the war. We used phony intelligence to get into the war. So why is this time any different? You know, why should the lying stop? There is really no truth that can be told that makes this situation look good. And I think of the announcement a few months ago of the CIA destroying tapes of the interrogation sessions involving torture and abuse. You know darn well if there was anything on those tapes that would have made the point that the government wants to make about interrogations and what we've learned and the useful information, those tapes would be shown on national television on a regular basis. But I think the tapes are probably so sadistic, they had to be destroyed. So not only is Bush undermining any moral authority that the United States may have, but he's put the United States in a terrible situation that is not only going to destroy his presidency, but I think it's going to probably destroy the presidency of a successor. And I think Vietnam destroyed two presidents, Johnson and Nixon. I don't think the Iraq War is going to be any different.
Yeah. Ray McGovern was here earlier today and made the point that the whole effort is simply to push this past Bush's departure date and make it the next president's problem. But he is saddling that president with a number of issues by forcing the early retirement of Admiral Fallon, and we're going to get a new CENTCOM commander. The money's on Petraeus, but maybe there's some other candidate we don't know about. And, of course, this person will be taking charge and really getting his or her, well, his feet on the ground just as the election is taking place next fall and facing a very uncertain future depending on exactly who is elected. And so these moves, coupled with Cheney's peace mission, they're again saying that the surge has led to a phenomenal improvement in the situation in Iraq.
Right. We've got the violence to levels of 2005 and early 2006, so if you call that progress. The Fallon thing really interests me because Bill Fallon was a student of mine at the National War College in the mid-1990s. This guy is not a bomb thrower. He's a very conservative naval officer. He took positions that were opposed to the administration on Iran and Iraq and Afghanistan. And, of course, Bob Gates' explanation is that there were no differences, but just the perception of differences. This is very unlike Bill Fallon, and it's very unlike a naval officer. And naval officers are extremely conservative by nature. But you know, at the War College, we read a very important book that was written by Harold McMaster dealing with the Vietnam situation, talking about the dereliction of duty. That was the title of the book. And basically, the message of McMaster's book is that U.S. officers were derelict during the Vietnam War. They knew the strategy wouldn't work. They knew it was wrong. They knew they were given a mission that they couldn't succeed. They knew they were being sent on a fool's errand. Now, here is Iraq, the same kind of fool's errand, and in many ways it's going to leave that region much worse than we left Southeast Asia when we got out of Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And there's really no limit to the dire implications of this decision in Iraq, because look at what's happened to Afghanistan, where the situation is worse. The Taliban and various ethnic tribal groups are in control of over half the country. Look at Pakistan and the uncertainty of the northwestern provinces and territories in Pakistan. And look at the undermining of the security of the Middle East generally. And just as you have Cheney running around on phony missions, what about Condoleezza Rice running around the Middle East? It was Condoleezza Rice who gave us the election in Gaza that we didn't like, so we didn't recognize the results of it because, oops, the wrong party won. And then when you had the war in Lebanon, she referred to that, and I thought a very sordid description that these were the birth pangs of a new Middle East.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of ugliness that Bush's successor is going to inherit, and there are really no easy fixes on any of this.
Mm-hmm. Mel Goodman with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You can call in at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. From the president's speech at the Pentagon this morning, let's listen to another quick clip. And here we go.
It is necessary, and it is just, and with your courage, the battle in Iraq will end in victory.
And we missed a little bit of the first part of that, what he said. The battle in Iraq is noble, it is necessary, and it is just. And on that note, the little ding you heard is my instant messenger. Dave in Eureka is on the line. Brian, bring up Dave, please, because Dave has been choking on the word noble and the characterization of this liberation of Iraq as a noble adventure for the United States. And, Dave, when I heard the president utter that word this morning, I have to tell you that you were the first person who came to mind. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, it did ring a strange bell hearing that kind of a word coming from him. But, you know, I often feel the need to connect the dots as I see them. This was a long-planned venture, this invasion into the Middle East. It is for some corporations, extremely profitable. And that's what it's all about. It's not an accident. It's not bad judgment. They planned it. And I don't think they intend to give it up one way or another. They intend to hang on to their invasions, their occupations. They're just too profitable for the Halliburtons and Lockheed Martins and the group.
Well, on the flip side of that, it was interesting because the president is clearly defensive about the recent estimates that state that we could end up spending as much as $3 trillion on this misadventure in Iraq. And while he stated that those figures are inflated in his view, he offered nothing to correct the record and advance a number of his own, Mel.
Well, remember, the price of oil was about $30 a barrel when we went into Iraq. It's over $100 now, and I think the price of Lockheed stock when Bush came into office was under $30 a share, and now it's over $100. So the war has been extremely profitable, and I think I agree with your caller. I don't think 9/11 had anything to do with this war. I think 9/11 was the pretext for the war, but Cheney and Rumsfeld and Bush would have found a way no matter what. And I think this is what George Tenet understood when he said slam dunk to the president when the president wanted more information to dissemble to the American people. And just as Colin Powell was given false information, and he had to know this information was false when he went to the United Nations on the 5th of February, 2003. So the plotting and the manipulation that went into this war sets really new standards for the kinds of sordid activities this administration has engaged in really from day one. And it goes back to a defense guidance statement that was written in draft in 1992 by such people as Lewis Scudder Libby and Paul Wolfowitz. And Dick Cheney was the Secretary of Defense when it was written. Fortunately, it was leaked to the L.A. Times and killed at that time. But nearly a decade later, Bush was back into position where he could put that defense planning guidance into effect. And basically the bottom line was we won the Cold War. We were triumphal. We were exceptional. And basically we can use our power any way we want to. And this is the way this administration has conducted itself. And we are all going to pay that terrible price.
Yeah. And Mel Goodman, this was a moment of gloating and revisionist history for the president. He only made one thing that could be even remotely interpreted as self-criticism or an acknowledgement of the problems that they didn't think about in advance or plan for. Quote, the battle in Iraq has been longer and harder and more costly than we anticipated. Nothing about Bremer's blunders. Nothing about the de-bathification program that has led to so many problems. Nothing about the failed reconstruction, just some phony updates on a few things that have improved. And he also glossed over the failure of attempts, you know, the real purpose of this so-called surge was to provide the breathing space for some reconciliation between the fractious parties in Iraq. And again, in the newspaper today, we read that they can't even agree on the size of the table to sit around and hash out their differences. And they've made virtually no progress in you know, forming a government that will survive and really trying to reconcile the competing interests that really caused this civil war and the ongoing bloodshed.
Well, I go back to the several months before the war when General Shinseki, who was the commander of the army, when he was asked how many troops would be needed in Iraq after the war, after we overthrew Saddam Hussein, and he said far more than what would be needed for a military triumph. And he was pressed, and he said 200,000 to 300,000. And, of course, he was ridiculed and marginalized by Paul Wolfowitz and Dick Rumsfeld and basically chased into retirement and was made a lame duck for his final year in the military. And we don't hear about Shinseki anymore. And he was he faded away. And I hope this doesn't happen to Bill Fallon. I hope that Senator Carl Levin of the Senate Armed Forces Committee subpoenas or summons Bill Fallon to testify before the Armed Forces Committee the day after he retires, which would be only a week or so after Petraeus testifies to the same Armed Forces Committee, to tell us what the differences are between someone like Fallon, but really someone, the people who are in the Pentagon, who are the professional military cadre, who dislike this war and know what this war is doing to the American military and how it's undermining
legitimacy of the American military as well as the moral credibility of the United States.
Yeah.
The longer we stay in Iraq, that is some of the price we are going to have to pay.
Mel Goodman with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. We're going to take our break and return and talk about his new book about the Central Intelligence Agency. It's called Failure of Intelligence, The Decline and Fall of the CIA. It's just out in hardcover from Roman and Littlefield. More in a moment. Grab the podcast at peterbcollins.com. You're listening to KRXA 540.
Checking traffic on KRXA and just one accident out there with injuries. It's Hollister Hospital Road at Southside Road. Vehicle overturned, landed on its roof inside of a riverbed. CHP is on the scene and paramedics are on the way. Morgan Hill heads up northbound 101 at Dunn Avenue. We have a mattress that's in the middle lane. Highway 68, no stalls, no accidents. Highway 1 as you make your way through Santa Cruz County as well as Monterey County. Currently checking and stalling accident free. Of course, southbound 17 on to southbound 1 at Santa Cruz. Every day slowing there. And Highway 17 going through the Santa Cruz Mountains. That currently checks in stalling accident-free right now. This report is brought to you by Carfax. That used car you're buying smell a little fishy. It may have been damaged in the floods of Hurricane Katrina. The government warns that flood-damaged cars are not safe. Ask for a Carfax vehicle history report or go to Carfax.com. If you're out and about, you spot a traffic problem, give us a call, 415-901-7990. I'm Nate Nix, and that's traffic on KRXA.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Every night, Jack Thomas camps out on a cold, lonely street corner. Tonight, some people almost brought him something to eat. Someone almost drove him to a shelter. Another almost brought him a warm blanket. And Jack Thomas, well, he almost made it through the night. Sometimes instead of giving, we almost give. But that's the same as not giving at all. Don't almost give. Give. Visit don'talmostgive.org. A message from the Ad Council.
President Bush says he listens to his military commanders. Well, Mr. President, I was one of those commanders, and you weren't listening when we warned you of the dangers we'd face invading Iraq. Now our military is overcommitted, and America is less secure. Mr. President, you're being told we need serious diplomacy, not escalation. And you're still not listening. If the President won't listen, Congress must.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I'm your humble host, Peter B. Melvin A. Goodman is my guest, former CIA officer, in a brand new book called Failure of Intelligence, The Decline and Fall of the CIA. Got to be painful for you to write an account like this, a critical analysis.
Well, it is in a sense, because I spent 24 years there. Some of my closest friends are there. Some of them no longer speak to me. But it was the necessity to write about the CIA in terms of what I know from the inside, particularly the failures on intelligence analysis that no one has ever really written about before. If you look at Tim Weiner's book that deals with operational materials, and I think the book was rather one-sided, there was a lack of balance in that book.
But it's important for this country to realize that whenever a policy has gotten into trouble, there's always been pressure on the intelligence community to try to cook the books in a way that somehow makes the policy look more attractive than it really is. And, of course, Iraq is the worst case scenario imaginable. When you start creating false intelligence to go to war, then you're doing something that's unconscionable and you have to start over. And my last chapter that talks about what needs to be done talks about starting over at the CIA. And right now, the CIA and the intelligence community is in the hands of the Pentagon, because what George Bush has done with his government over 7 years is to essentially militarize national security, militarize foreign policy, and militarize the foreign bureaucracy in Washington, including the CIA, where a four-star general who believes in torture and abuse is running things, and a retired three-star admiral is the czar for intelligence at the National Intelligence Directorate.
The guy who came over from the NSA, who inaugurated the illegal eavesdropping before 9/11.
And he brought his lawyers with him. So that's what scared me when I found out the same lawyers who justified the warrantless eavesdropping were coming along with Hayden to enforce law and order at the CIA. And if you notice something at the CIA since Hayden arrived, remember, his predecessor was Porter Goss, and there were leaks galore when Porter Goss, it was such an inept leadership at the CIA. I'll give Hayden credit. He has shut down the gossip at the CIA, and we're not learning anything about the secret prisons, about extraordinary renditions, about phony renditions, about torture and abuse, and all of the horrors and crimes, I think, that the CIA has committed, particularly during this war, with the sanction, with the endorsement, with the conceptualization of the White House and the White House lawyers like Gonzales and the Justice Department and the Attorney General, again, like Gonzales and people like Jay Bybee, who was rewarded with a judgeship out in your neck of the woods.
Oh, yeah, we needed that on the Ninth Circuit.
And we also sent John Yoo back to University of California Law School.
Thank you so
faculty.
Very much. Yes.
He wrote one of the torture
memos. To infect younger
minds. And it's interesting to me that when the tapes were destroyed, they were destroyed in the wake of a new lawyer coming into the Justice Department, Jack Goldsmith, who wrote the book The Terror Presidency, and made it clear that Yoo's memos and Bybee's memos had no legal standing and had to be corrected.
And Goldsmith is, we can't say he's against torture.
No.
But he was even appalled.
He was appalled
by the Bybee-Yoo legal rationales that were advanced, and he tried to dial back, and that's why he didn't last there very long.
Well, we find that you can't walk the cat back on these things. That's why it's going to be hard to extract ourselves from Iraq, just as it was difficult. And when you look at the 1968 Tet Offensives, the war was over with the Tet Offensive. We were there for another 7 years. The war is essentially over in Iraq. We shouldn't talk about this as the Iraq War. There is not a war. There is a civil war that's going on, and we're involved in counterinsurgency.
It's an occupation.
Tactics. It's an occupation.
Yeah.
And
now,
it should be seen as a colonial effort.
Mel, I haven't had a chance to read your book cover to cover. I've only had time to glance at parts of it. But one theme that I picked up is consistent with some of the conversations we've had over the last couple of years. You went public to oppose the nomination of Robert Gates as the defense secretary to replace Donald Rumsfeld. And you expand on that in the book. You basically lay out that he was one of the early individuals who led to the politicization of intelligence. Back in the Reagan era, he was a so-called Soviet expert. And together with Wild Bill Casey, they were trying to drum up fear about the Soviet Union. They had this annual dog and pony show about their military capabilities, and that was always designed to pump up our spending on military activities and hardware. And he really is an interesting figure when you tie together his previous jobs and his current one.
Well, I think there's a delicious irony in taking the man who was responsible for the politicization of all the intelligence on the Soviet Union to justify the defense spending of Ronald Reagan's first term, first administration, and make him the head of the war effort, given that was a war that we entered into with phony and politicized intelligence. So when I spent 2 days in the winter of 2006 lobbying against the appointment of Bob Gates and trying to attract some interest, I went to some senators, I went to some congressmen, and they at least listened to me. They let me come in and sit down. I could talk to them for a period of time. But it was clear that they had no interest in opposing Bob Gates. And I finally said, you know, you're treating Bob Gates like the morning after pill. He's going to abort Donald Rumsfeld. And they said to me, that's exactly it. He isn't Donald Rumsfeld. So my feeling is, be careful what you wish for. We didn't want Donald Rumsfeld in this town. But don't think that
the replacement of Rumsfeld by Gates is going to lead to any different kind of position on the war. The problem with Rumsfeld, like Robert McNamara in Vietnam, and there's an irony here, McNamara turned against the war, and Johnson was fed up and got rid of him and had to bring in someone like Clark Clifford, who he thought was more reliable. Well, Donald Rumsfeld realized the war wasn't working and was beginning to think about retrenchment and heading up the first secret talks that were going on in the Pentagon about what do we do about this war, and Bush and Cheney cut him off at the knees and brought in Bob Gates, who's a loyal subordinate to the Bush family. He's been doing the bidding of the Bush family. It was George Herbert Walker Bush who made Gates the CIA director, and I posed that nomination in 1991.
Also put him in charge of his presidential library.
Put him in charge of the presidential library, mm-hmm. and then put him in charge of Texas A&M, which they should really rename Bush University. And someone told me, who's a recruiter over at the CIA, that they get more candidates and accept more applicants from Texas A&M than any university in the country.
Well, what about Regent Liberty, huh?
Well, Liberty probably comes in second.
Mel, just one final thing. We talked earlier about Admiral Fallon being forced to retire early, and the article that led to his early retirement stated that he was the last man standing between Cheney's desire to attack Iran and any resistance to it. How do you characterize that, and should we be vigilant about any intentions toward Iran before next January?
Well, I think we should be vigilant because this administration has established the fact that they are irresponsible. And there are certainly actors within this administration that want to go to war against Iran. But I don't think Fallon was what was standing between us in going to war against Iran. I think what was standing between war and Iran and Dick Cheney was the devastating defeat in Iraq and the cost of Iraq and the losses in Iraq. What Cheney wants to do is keep putting pressure, military pressure. And Fallon thinks this is counterproductive, and I happen to think he's right.
Yeah. Melvin Goodman, thank you very much. Great to see you.
Thank you, Peter.
See you again in May on your book tour on the West Coast. We'll spend a full hour, and I'll have read the book by then. We'll talk more.
Look forward to that.
Very good. Coming up next, we open up the phones in the Free Speech Zone. I'd like to hear from you, comment about the fifth anniversary of the mess in Iraq, or anything else that's on your mind. Grab a line now, and we'll get to you first at 888-5-PETER-B.
We're talking with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company, which offers more than 60 different wines made with certified organic grapes. Veronique, French wines are intimidating for some American consumers. Mm-hmm. How do you help break it down for us?
Don't be intimidated. What is there to be intimidated about? There's nothing too exotic about them. You either like them or you don't like them. You know, it's really simple. You either like Van Gogh or you don't. You either like the Beatles or you don't. You know, wines are really a form of a vibration in a bottle, just like poetry, just like music. And you know the style of music that you like. So maybe you're going to love French wines. And then go for it.
Learn more about the Organic Wine Company on the web at ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE toll-free. That's 1-888-ECO-WINE. Tell them Peter B. sent you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. President Bush, in a speech marking the fifth anniversary of the war in Iraq, said it's been longer and harder and more costly than we anticipated. But Mr. Bush said the troop surge has turned the situation around, and this is no time to give up.
Successes we're seeing in Iraq are undeniable, yet some in Washington still call for retreat. War critics can no longer credibly argue that we're losing in Iraq, so they now argue the war costs too much.
I'm Dan Revive. From the Democrats today, a very different picture. Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton both say continuing the war is pointless.
The Iraqis have not done what they had to do to secure their own future. And I don't believe our young men and women should stay there to fight their civil war.
Clinton in Charleston, West Virginia, and Obama in Fayetteville, North Carolina, took a swipe at her.
Who do you trust to end a war? Someone who opposed the war from the beginning? Or someone who started opposing it when they started preparing a run for president.
Visiting Iraq this week, Republican John McCain said if the U.S. hurries to pull out, it'll be a victory for al-Qaeda. Dan Revive, CBS News.
In San Francisco, several hundred people joined an anti-war protest on Market Street, while in New York, the Granny Peace Brigade brought knitting to Times Square. And in Washington, 32 demonstrators were arrested when they tried to block entrances to the IRS. Apparently it's just a coincidence, but there's a new audio message from Osama bin Laden. He's blasting the decision by Danish newspapers to reprint a two-year-old cartoon depicting the Prophet Muhammad with a turban shaped like a bomb. Bin Laden calls it insulting and says there will be a response. Danish police recently said they uncovered a plot to kill the artist. Parts of Arkansas, Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, and Kentucky are underwater because heavy rain fell on already saturated ground. Clint Brannon had to flee his home in Allison, Arkansas.
All we got out of the house was just a few clothes and the kids and my mother. And everything else we're going to lose, I guess the water's coming up real fast.
Record or near-record flood crests are forecast for some towns in Missouri. Royce Fugate is the city administrator in White Plains.
The low-water crossings and many of our streets that, you know, have low areas, of course, are closed and can't get through. In fact, we've had so many out in the county, they've even run out of enough block boards and don't proceed signs and things like that.
At least 13 deaths are blamed on the weather. Hillary Clinton's schedules from the time she was first lady show that she was home in the White House on a half dozen days when then-President Clinton had sexual encounters with intern Monica Lewinsky. More than 11,000 pages of her schedules were released today by the Clinton Presidential Library and the National Archives. The Dow down 293 points today. The Nasdaq lost 58. This is CBS News.
You know, a wise man once said, "Do what you love and you won't have to work a day in your life." Of course, small business owners know that doing what you love sometimes involves doing things you don't love, like the finances. That's why more small business owners turn to Visa Business. It has multiple payment options like credit and debit that are accepted at millions of locations worldwide. And it helps reduce paperwork by tracking your finances. To see more ways Visa can help, go to visa.com/smallbusiness. Business takes Visa.
Ace Hardware wants to make your spring spectacular. Good expert help, friendly advice, and great ways to save on all your jobs around the house. Like a Rubbermaid corner tool rack for $9.99. For a simple start and a fabulous finish, pick up a gallon of Ace Royal paint at its everyday low price. Use your Ace Rewards card and earn 10 points for every dollar you spend. But don't wait, because the sale ends Monday at Ace, the helpful place.
Price is good at participating Ace Hardware stores while supplies last. See store for details.
On Christmas Day, three young men, two of them brothers, were attacked by a Siberian tiger that escaped from its enclosure at the San Francisco Zoo. Now there's a critical report from the Association of Zoos and Aquariums. Larry Cherone of CBS radio station KCBS has details.
The report by the organization that accredits the nation's zoos is critical of workers for not believing the two brothers who said a tiger was on the loose and had mauled their friend. The 250-pound Siberian tiger killed 17-year-old Carlos Souza Jr. and went after the brothers before police shot the animal dead. The report also said the aging facility was understaffed to handle such an emergency, but overall, the zoo's response was impressive. Larry Cherone, CBS News, San Francisco.
At the National Zoo in Washington, the male and female giant pandas were brought together yesterday in the hope that they'd mate and produce a little giant panda. Apparently, they didn't get the idea. Today, the female was artificially inseminated. Keepers say it might be months before they know if it worked. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Wondering when it's the right time for service? Your Hummer knows. With Oil Life Monitor, OnStar Vehicle Diagnostics, and a complete service schedule in every owner's manual. And when it's time, head down the Good Wrench service lane for an oil change, tire rotation, and a Good Wrench multi-point vehicle inspection.
Can't stop thinking about it.
See your Hummer Good Wrench dealer today or log on to GoodWrench.com. Diagnostic capabilities vary by model. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations. Good Wrench and go. We're keeping it simple.
Taking care of business, Office Depot.
Need great deals for your home or office? Then hurry into Office Depot today. Office Depot has lowered prices on hundreds of items throughout the store. So don't wait any longer to stock up on a wide assortment of office supplies and furniture at new low prices. Plus, with the Office Depot low price guarantee, if you find an identical product advertised for less at a competitor, Office Depot will match that price. Guaranteed. Office Depot, taking care of business. Certain restrictions apply. See store for details.
Live.
live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter V. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter V.'s America.
Let's open up the telephones for a free speech zone. I've been real busy talking with lots of people here in Washington over the last couple of days. Haven't been able to get to all your phone calls. So here's a wide open opportunity for you to call in. Talk about the Obama speech yesterday. Talk about Bush's speech today, riddled with lies about Iraq. And this 5-year dark day. Yes, it has been 5 years. And we don't have an exit strategy or an end date in sight. You may also want to comment about the Bear Stearns financial meltdown and the bailout of Wall Street banks and what it means. The market has responded favorably to that and the Fed's rate cut. But how long can they continue to prop up these greedy corporations that really are responsible for their own problems? And it fascinates me how Republicans often lecture about individual responsibility. And to see the greed that drove these people to push all these subprime mortgages, and now we see the fallout from it. I'm waiting for a CEO of one of those big, like Countrywide or other mortgage companies that have hit the rocks, waiting for him to say, you know, I feel a little bad about this, and I think maybe I'll cough up just a few million dollars, or maybe I'm going to go out and pick 10 people and help them avoid foreclosure. Oh, I'm dreaming again. Pinch me, will you? Speaking of bad dream, John McCain went to Baghdad. And, of course, he's burnishing his image as the pro-war president who wants to head the third term of a Bush presidency. And, you know, some of this is to be expected from a guy like McCain. He goes on these photo ops and declares, gee, look around, nobody tried to shoot me, I guess everything's okay. And as we learned last April Fool's Day, when he made a visit to Baghdad and went to a marketplace, there's something like 100 troops, a couple of Black Hawks, they had cleared the area, snipers on the rooftops, and he and a Republican Congressman, Mike Pence of Indiana, have the gall to state that, gosh, this is really nice, it's like going to a flea market in Indianapolis. So in Baghdad yesterday, actually he got to Amman, Jordan, and there he was speaking to reporters and talking about the situation in Iraq. And he said, we continue to be concerned about Iranian operatives taking al-Qaeda into Iran, training them, and sending them back. Pressed by a reporter to elaborate, McCain said, it's common knowledge and it's been reported in the media that al-Qaeda is going back into Iran and receiving training and are coming back into Iraq from Iran. That's well known, and it's unfortunate. A tug on the sleeve from Joey Lieberman, the former Democrat, who's mostly a Republican but calls himself an independent and mercifully caucuses with the Democrats so that Harry Reid is the leader of the Senate instead of Mitch McConnell. So Joey Lieberman leans over and says, hey, McCain, you're full of it. And McCain turns to reporters and says, oh, I'm sorry. The Iranians are training extremists, not al-Qaeda. Now, this is the man Hillary Clinton said is ready to be our commander-in-chief. Don't you feel great about it? Yeah, McCain, Hillary, they're qualified, Barack Obama. You got to ask him. And I am interested in your calls and comments about Barack Obama's incredible speech in Philadelphia yesterday. Will it put to rest the endless loop of video from Jeremiah Wright? I'm not sure. I hope so. But I think that he made a major step forward in addressing these issues. And I may have told you this either subbing on the Tom Hartman program or on this broadcast over the last couple of days. But just before my eyes closed late night on Monday, I don't know what possessed me, but I flipped on the Fox News channel. And there's Sean Hannity bragging about how he's the guy who broke the footage of Jeremiah Wright. And he says he's been playing it for the last 14 months. I don't pay enough attention to Hannity to know if that's actually true. But then, and this is priceless, Sean Hannity talked about how in 2004 he is so proud that he was the first television anchor to bring the Swift Boat veterans onto TV to tell their lies about John Kerry. Now, this is mind-boggling. It is just a little snapshot into that pea brain of Sean Hannity. And he thinks that exposing these videos from Jeremiah Wright, and yeah, some of those comments are over the top. I can defend a lot of them. But some of them, you know, are not worth defending. They're his opinion. They're based on his experience. And Obama, I think, gave us a good explanation of the contradictions and the historical factors that drive these comments from people like Jeremiah Wright. But Sean Hannity thinks that the character assassination of the Swift boats is as valuable from his point of view as this attempt to smear, slime, and destroy the character of Senator Obama. Think about it. 888-5-PETER-B. Our lines are open for you here, a free speech zone till the bottom of the hour. And then Robert Perry, our weekly contributor on Fridays, will join us. He's located here in Washington, and he's got some fascinating comments about the Iraq war as a war crime. We'll talk about that with Bob coming up about 20 minutes from now. First up in the free speech zone, it's Matt in Sacramento. Thanks for your call, Matt.
Yeah, I just want to bring up something that I don't know how many people know this, but the OCC, the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency,
right.
They have a thing called Doctrine of Preemption. And what they did was all the state laws that prevented all the things that led to this Bear Stearns and all this other collapse of the subprimes, there were a lot of state laws that prevented those things from happening. And the federal government stepped in and said you can't enforce those state laws so that they could go ahead and do this. Well, where is this on the news?
Well, you make a very good point. There's also the matter of the Glass-Steagall Act, which was heavily modified, almost repealed, by the Clinton administration. I mean, it was an act of Congress, but Bill signed it in 1998. And it took down the firewalls between banks and investment banks, and it permitted this development of securitized mortgages so that instead of dealing with the person, the bank that you actually borrowed the money from, they just originate the loan, they sell it to somebody else, it's bundled together with good paper and bad paper, and they thought that that was a way to spread their risk. And as long as the housing market was on the incline, it's a Ponzi scheme that worked. But as things leveled off and then equities started to decline, that's when the crunch really hit. Now, what we have seen, Matt, that I think you're also alluding to, in California, former State Senator Jackie Speier made three different attempts over a three-year period to pass a privacy law to protect Californians from exploitation by banks and insurance companies and other financial institutions. And it, of course, attracted great opposition from those very same interests. So they opposed it and opposed it. They gave a lot of money to our discredited and recalled Governor Gray Davis. And twice he vetoed the bill. And then when he was on his knees because of the recall, he relented and signed Jackie Speier's bill. And what happened next? Well, the Republican-controlled House and Senate passed a federal law that basically overrides the state law to protect Californians' privacy and to protect us from this exploitation by financial institutions. And you can trace this, Matt, all the way back to campaign contributions. That is where this cycle begins. And the enabling of political campaigns through the contributions from special interests to the candidates' campaigns results in the payback of legislation that they think favors them. And certainly short-term, the banks and the investment banks and the mortgage companies made huge profits and expanded their businesses exponentially. And now the crash is occurring, and your money and mine is being used to bail them out. And we know that the Fed has agreed to collateralize some paper of unknown value. And so at least $30 billion of our money is securitizing these mortgages and other paper, and we have no idea.
Oh, it's $230 billion, because you're not counting the $200 billion before the $30 billion.
No, I'm just separating them. The $30 billion is explicitly to securitize some of the Bear Stearns mortgage packages.
Right, but there's another $200 billion underwriting all the rest of the banks. You know that.
Yes. I just wanted to separate them because the $200 billion for the other banks is not necessarily securitized against this questionable paper.
Well, I was under the impression, because on the evening national news, they said they were all part of the same thing.
Okay.
And they had it lumped together as $230 billion, NBC.
Well, my only distinction is that the $30 billion was earmarked and is linked to those securities, and if they go down, the Fed loses that money. Thanks a lot for your call, Matt. I appreciate it. Ben and Salinas, always a pithy contributor. Welcome. You're on the air on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Modulate my language so not to sound like a raving lunatic here, but don't we have a Department of the Treasury? Don't we have IRS complete with badges and guns and judges? Why are there not buses lining up at these places and taking these people with the $300 million severance packages to jail? Why are they letting the American little guy in this noble cause being given the Enron treatment where the big boys are setting up digs in Paraguay and Dubai? Meanwhile, the little guy's going to get it in the shorts and probably be in the street begging for food for his kids. Who in the hell is driving the boat?
Very good questions, Ben, as always. Thank you for your call. We're going to take a break and return to more of your phone calls. It's a free speech zone here on the Peter B. Collins Show. At the bottom of the hour, Robert Perry, the journalist from ConsortiumNews.com, will be joining us. 888-5-PETER-B is my toll-free number. I got lines open for you, so grab that fancy iPhone and let me know what's on your mind. It's 888-573-8372. The Peter B. Collins Show, produced by Katrina Rill. Brian Urban is driving the bus. You're listening to KRXA 540.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey in the old Granary building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Hi, I'm J.R. Medina, owner of PG Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue in Pacific Grove. My family and I are proud to serve the finest selection of beer, wine, liquor, and non-alcoholic beverages in the Monterey area. Our store is evolving beyond adult and soft drinks. We serve freshly brewed Acme coffee, the finest breakfast burritos, and now Nathan's hot dogs. We're open daily. Come by and check out the big, big selection and low, low prices at PG Liquors. That's PG Liquors at 229 Grand in Pacific Grove.
Carmel's community bookstore, The Pilgrim's Way, is a locally owned independent bookstore and has been for nearly 40 years.
Discover for yourself our intimate and unique setting, including the Secret Garden, known locally as a hidden treasure in downtown Carmel. Our friendly staff at Pilgrim's Way are available to assist you with any personal needs or gift buying. And our book selection offers the best of personal development, local interest, bestsellers, novels, children's, and metaphysical, plus much, much more. We have great music and healing tools, cards, and garden statuary.
Visit us at www.pilgrimsway.com or call 624-4955 or visit the Pilgrim's Way Carmel's only bookstore and the Secret Garden on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in Carmel.
Looking for ways to improve and beautify your landscape with sound environmental practices and enjoy seasonal produce from your own land? Well, Tree of Life Ecological Services offers landscaping and design to suit your specific garden needs, large or small. Contact Tree of Life Ecological Services at treeoflifees.com or call 831-566-EDEN. That's 566-3336.
Checking traffic on KRXA. We have a couple of things to tell you about. Hollister Hospital Road at Southside Road. An older injury crash with a car that flipped onto its roof and landed in a riverbed. Emergency crew is on the scene clearing that out. Live Oak, Soquel Avenue at 7th Avenue. An accident vehicle and a bicyclist involved in that. Luckily, no injuries to report. It looks like CHP is on the scene. Carmel Valley Village, West Carmel Valley Road at Ford Road. We have a two-car crash. The vehicles have pulled into a nearby parking lot. CHP is on the way. And heads up in Salinas, northbound 101 after Airport Boulevard, we have a large box, and cars are swerving to avoid that in the fast lane. This is brought to you by Carfax. Was that car you're buying wrecked in a crash on 101? Have the car salvaged in Salinas or rebuilt and resold? Ask your dealer for a Carfax vehicle history report or go to Carfax.com. If you're out and about and you spot a traffic problem, give us a call, 415-901-7990. I'm Nate Nix, and that's traffic on KRXA.
And we continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm in Washington, D.C. It's our final hour of broadcasting from D.C. this week. I'll be back in California tomorrow. You can always email me, Peter, at peterbcollins.com. I got a couple of lines open if you want to call in right now at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You can comment on Barack Obama's speech yesterday. You can talk about John McCain's confusion over the players in Iraq. George W. Bush's confusion about the history of his gallant and noble war and the occupation that drags on, or anything else that's on your mind. It's 888-573-8372. Got an email from, we'll call this person MC, I think, in Sacramento. Over the past week or so, the mainstream media has really been talking about Obama's pastor and his remarks. But I feel there's a double standard when it comes to the news outlets. John McCain said that Pastor Parsley of Ohio was a good friend and spiritual guide and mentor to him, and he said some horrible things about the Muslim religion, saying that America should have a holy war against them and making horrible comments about God and the prophet, but the mainstream media won't even talk about it. If you can give this subject more airtime, then maybe it'll catch on and we can demand an apology from McCain. Well, David Korn, who is the new Washington editor for Mother Jones magazine, joined us at the Take Back America conference the other night. And if you go to MotherJones.com, you can find his article about John McCain and Pastor Parsley. It's quite explosive, and the reason is that Sean Hannity isn't interested, even though he was having panic attacks about McCain being the nominee. As a solid Republican, he will never give McCain the equal treatment about his pastor compared to what they've done to Barack Obama. Mike in Sacramento, thanks for calling the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, Peter B. You're back there in my hometown. I was actually born in that city, Washington, D.C.
Wow. Well, they've got the humidifier turned up today just to make me feel comfortable, Mike.
Is it true that they're putting a crime scene tape all the way around the White House?
You know, we were there today at noontime when we expected that to occur, and it did not. It was a very small group of protesters, I'm sorry to report. And the police, the Secret Service, and the Capitol Police were swarming. And at one point, this small band of protesters was attempting to walk past the White House. There's a big mall now there where they've closed Pennsylvania Avenue for security reasons between Lafayette Park and the front side of the White House. And the protesters came up in front with bullhorns. They announced a citizen's arrest of Bush and Cheney. And then as they wanted to move on past the White House, there was a phalanx of guards who politely stopped them. And I tried to penetrate their same barrier, and they said, well, there's a hold on right now. And they would not let us pass a driveway where the president of the Russian Republic of Georgia was about to leave a luncheon with the president in a big motorcade. So it appeared there might have been a little confrontation there, but it was avoided. And so it was interesting. But frankly, you know, there are some very creative and committed people who've been trying to organize and lead these protests. And I'm sorry, there aren't enough people supporting the actions. Let's go to Arlene in Santa Cruz, listening on KRXA. Hello, Arlene.
Yes, I just turned my radio off.
Thank you.
The reason why I'm calling is no one has addressed the subject of the March 17th New Yorker magazine that came out with Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton in bed reaching for the red phone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have lived through 60 years of elections, and I have never seen a magazine or a paper print a cartoon that was so gross. And so this, children see this. They're going to see this on the newsstand. It is absolutely the most offensive cartoon, and I don't care whether you're Republican or Democrat. It mm-hmm. is the most offensive thing that a magazine could ever do during a presidential election. And I think things are getting way out of hand,
mm-hmm.
not only with the advertisement, but the media and everybody else.
Right. Well, Arlene, I respect your opinion. My own, when I get the New Yorker, and when it arrived in my mailbox, I took a look at that, and it cracked me up. Now, let's be fair to people who haven't seen it. Barack and Hillary were both clothed. And they were just both
that.
Reaching for the
that,
phone.
I know that, but you know, it's still the implication. You know, five-year-olds see these things when they pass the newsstand. And our teenagers see them. And what does that say to them about our respect for a presidential campaign? I mean, I know it half cracked me up too at first,
mm-hmm.
but the more I thought about it and the more I thought about the implications and what the teenagers and the young people are going to think with respect to what's going on during this campaign and this presidential election, I think it's getting out of hand. I'm sorry. Maybe it's funny, but mm-hmm. it's getting out of hand.
Well, I will agree with you that things have started to get out of hand. To me, that New Yorker cover was not the biggest issue. It was the ugly themes that really led to the Clinton campaign's use of that 3 a.m. phone call commercial. But I appreciate your comment, Arlene, and I'm glad you called. We're going to take a break and return with Robert Perry, the proprietor of ConsortiumNews.com. Stay tuned to the Peter B. Collins Show from Washington, D.C.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. To experience one-of-a-kind dishes, don't forget the weekly specials. The Mexicali Grill is open Monday through Saturday for lunch until 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Does it seem like the service is lacking at most service stations? Not at Mid-Valley Valero and Shell on Carmel Valley Road. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell offer complete auto repair, smog inspections, major brand tires, 30, 60, and 90,000 mile service checks, complete brake work, and fix any electrical problems. They even provide environmentally friendly auto detailing. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell use only the highest quality original and aftermarket auto parts. Call Mid-Valley Valero and Shell at 831-624-0722. That's 624-0722. Remember, for all your automobile needs, only Mid-Valley Valero and Shell will do. Locally owned, Mid-Valley Valero and Shell. Putting the service back in service stations.
Go ahead, take a deep breath. Yeah, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system, your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hey there, and who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department.
Wow.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I'm Justin Hamble, your Monterey Bay State Farm agent. Call me today at 831-688-3683. That's 688-3683.
Do you want some downtime? A break from work and worry without breaking the bank? At the Dunes and the Spa at Pajaro Dunes in Watsonville will give you the breathing space you need. The Spa at Pajaro Dunes is now open to the general public. Spend an hour being pampered with a warm stone massage or European facial. Gather your friends together for a spa party or surprise your sweetie with a couples massage. Stay for a long, lazy weekend in a luxurious condo at the Dunes with 150 acres of beach and wetlands. You'll have your own ocean view, and the price is unbeatable. Only a short drive from anywhere on the Central Coast, relief is only minutes away without the time and expense of a long trip. We'll also simplify your wedding plans. Have your ceremony, guests, and special events all in the same place. In nearby Watsonville, at the Dunes and the Spa at Pajaro Dunes will make your life a little easier and a lot more enjoyable. Call 888-91-DUNES and mention KRXA to get our lowest rates. That's 888-91-DUNES.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
We continue our live broadcast from Washington, D.C., and I want to thank Bill Press and Paul Woodhull and Amy Bolton of Jones Radio Networks for hosting us here at their fabulous studio just a few blocks away from the nation's capital, or the actual Capitol complex. You know what I mean. Robert Perry joins us, and he's a regular on our program every Friday. He writes prolifically at consortiumnews.com. And Neck Deep is the newest book from Robert Perry, co-authored with his sons Sam and Nat. And as we mentioned last week, there is that collector's item of Bob's book about the Iran-Contra affair. There are 10 special copies, survivors of the publisher's demise, right?
Pretty much.
And if you go to the website at consortiumnews.com, you can get more information. Well, Bob, we talked to Barbara Lee, the outspoken progressive anti-war congresswoman from Oakland, California, earlier today. Mel Goodman was here a little while ago, and we've been focusing a lot on this somewhat sordid fifth anniversary of Bush's adventure in Iraq. Mm-hmm. And it's been a surrealistic week as Dick Cheney embarked on a 10-day peace mission, I call it that, to the region, and even spent the night in Baghdad at an undisclosed vice presidential location. He took a stroll for the cameras out in the streets for a minute or two, and proclaimed, using the word phenomenal, that the surge has reduced violence and led to a resumption of some kind of normalcy in Iraq. And then the president gave this, again, surreal speech at the Pentagon today, and I asked you, you said you watched as much as you could. But my my portable BS detector travels with me at all times. And as I was trying to watch the president's speech, it was interrupted not by applause, but by the BS meter. over and over and over again.
Well, it's almost like he hasn't been willing to accept the reality that, that exists. This was a war of choice. It was a war of aggression. There wasn't any reason for it to happen besides some of this doctored intelligence that was put forward. Everybody sort of knew that the intelligence was certainly suspect. Even then, there was not a real sense that there was an urgent need to deal with this problem. Even if someone believed there had been some WMD there, there wasn't any evidence of a tie to Al-Qaeda. That was simply essentially fabricated.
Dick Cheney hasn't figured that out. He repeated it again.
Well, I know, but
there's a link, he says.
Well, they're always been talking about Zarqawi, who was
a freelancer.
Basically a freelancer.
From Jordan.
Exactly. And when he went into Baghdad, we now know that there was not an effort to help him or protect him. The Iraqi forces were trying to locate him to imprison him, expel him, or kill him. So he wasn't an ally. Just because someone went to a hospital in your city doesn't mean you're in bed with them. It just means that they happened to be have evaded your detection and got in to get some medical attention.
And Zarqawi was there for several years before he adopted the brand Al-Qaeda.
Right. Also, where he was hiding out was an area that was protected by the United States and Britain in the no-fly zone. So in reality, the Iraqis, if they wanted to get to kill Zarqawi, they were being prevented from doing so by the United States and Great Britain. And that became a big element of trying to show that there was this, not only that there might be some WMD, but that there was a plausible connection to Al-Qaeda, that therefore Al-Qaeda might use it against the United States. It was a stretch. It was always known to be that there. We don't know even to this day what the real reasons were, beyond projecting power and maybe securing some natural resources. And I think a lot of it was to essentially use Iraq as kind of an Alderaan. If you remember the Death Star in the Star Wars movies, they blew up Alderaan just to sort of show they could.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a certain amount of that here too, where the United States wanted to show, here's what we do to people who get in our way. And Iraq became this example as well as a place to project power. So it was in so many ways, this was a war of aggression, a war crime. The slaughter of Iraqi innocents, but also soldiers. These were young Iraqi men defending their country, and they were killed in vast numbers, often slaughtered in the bombings or by the extraordinary firepower the United States could bring on anyone who got in their way,
including depleted uranium rounds.
So you had this extraordinary, unprecedented use of force by a powerful nation against a very weak nation, and for Bush to be sort of bragging about it and saying how justified it was.
Well, and in the future, military historians will study this. He talked about that today, as if this was one of the most brilliant military campaigns in history. And a superpower went in and knocked over a dictator who had bluffed. He'd bluffed about his desire to gather or possess or use chemical and biological weapons, and he had been bluffing for a long, long time. And I had an inkling, but we now know for sure just how limited their military capabilities were. No working air force. The Fedayeen, crack kind of mad dog forces who were commanded by one of Saddam's wacky sons. You know, that was supposed to be this virulent fighting force, and they cratered in 3 days.
Well, of course, some of them did melt away, and as they were sort of assigned to do, to create the insurgency. But also, even on the point of him bluffing, he really did tell the truth. And so did the Iraqis. They said, we don't have WMD.
Right.
And they said they sent a over 1,000-page or multi-thousand-page document to the UN saying that. And they invited the UN inspectors in finally to sort of look around. And they were there for months.
Mm-hmm.
They
brought Dan Rather in, remember, for that exclude with Saddam?
Right. And he said then he didn't have it. So you have all this. There wasn't really the evidence. And I know there's been this claim that Saddam may have bluffed and may have provoked the war himself. But in effect, he wasn't bluffing. He may have bluffed earlier, but by the mm-hmm. time it was getting closer to the actual invasion, he was saying, we don't have the stuff you think we have.
Yeah. Here's a soundbite from Bush at the Pentagon this morning.
Successes we're seeing in Iraq are undeniable, yet some in Washington still call for retreat. or critics can no longer credibly argue that we're losing in Iraq. So they now argue the war costs too much.
And he went on to say that the war doesn't cost as much as $3 trillion, but he wouldn't name a figure. It was a bizarre series of remarks from the president today.
Well, I think that's what he's been doing ever since. I mean, one of the odd things about Bush is not only did he make these essentially false statements before the war, and one could argue that maybe he really thought there was WMD, maybe he thought there was a tie to Al-Qaeda, but then afterwards, one of the most remarkable elements of this was that after the invasion, after the search for WMD had gone on for several months and nothing was being found by the U.S. forces, when you get to July of 2003, Bush begins to just rewrite the history. He says that all Saddam had to do was to let the inspectors in, but he wouldn't let the inspectors in. But all of us have been watching the inspectors for months before Bush forced them to leave in March of 2003. But Bush began to pretend they had never been allowed in. He created this false history. And the Washington Press Corps, which has certainly not distinguished itself at any point during these 5 years, essentially let him get away with it.
And even as this was televised today, the only thing remotely critical was that CNN ran the graphic crawl showing some recent poll numbers, that 71% believe we should be pulling troops out at least by January of 2009, if not sooner, and that a full 66% of people think that it was a mistake to go into Iraq. Only 33% in polls today support the president. And so that's the only contrast you saw. But at the end of this BS presentation, the media just said, well, there it was. And we didn't get any critics or any commentators or even any truth seekers to come on and say, well, you know, the president said this, but the reality is that. They simply act as stenographers, I don't know what the verb is there, for the president's remarks, and uncritically deliver them to us and just say, okay, the surge is working. And CNN presented one graphic showing the violence that surged last year and how it has declined, at least in the measure of U.S. troop deaths. But that is not the only barometer of the failure that we have created and that we continue to see spun by the Bush administration as a success.
Right, and all you're going to end up with is someone called it, this was like a placeholder, that these thousands of troops were put in when they ultimately go back to about where they were a year ago, when we get them back to 140,000 or so, that will just be the status quo ante. That's where they were before the surge started, and the chances of the violence continuing will just come back. And I think that's been the big problem here, that all we've looked at is how can the Bush administration take us through the next news cycle, the next congressional cycle, and keep it going. This has been more of a stringing out the game rather than really coming to a conclusion. And it's hard to picture how the conclusion works well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure any of the experts will tell you that in any short term, Bush's strategy would work. They want to keep trying it, but they haven't been able to show how you actually get to the end game. There's hope that maybe the various sides will reconcile. But mostly what we're seeing now is some sides are being paid off. There's bribes being paid not to attack American troops. There's been
90,000 people that the president cited today as members of these awakening councils are essentially being paid to stop shooting or trying other ways to kill American soldiers.
And if you're buying time and if there's some other possible way of working it out after that, perhaps you could deal with it. But, I mean, it has become a situation where all you can see is it going on forever. And victory almost has become, in Bush's mind, I think, playing this out without an end,
mm-hmm.
maintaining the American military presence there indefinitely. John McCain says it could go on 100 years or more. And that's sort of where they're at. And I think it's a question for the American people as to whether or not that's something they can really live with. Mm-hmm. They can, as an imperial power going on forever. And there's also this idea that we can now sort of solve every small problem that the Iraqis have. We're getting into the reeds of trying to figure out how we can get this group to work with that group. And once you start doing that in a situation like this, you are going to be stuck there for pretty much forever.
Well, because we cannot micromanage the integration of these disparate groups. We're not viewed as an honest broker. If anything, we tend to be the only reason that Sunni and Shia have common ground, that they want the occupiers out.
Well, to me, the part of Bush's speech that really sort of got to me when he started making excuses for the number of children who were killed, and he began to blame the Iraqi forces for supposedly using the kids as human shields. And that, whether that happened or not is hard to say, I suppose, but it really is so disingenuous to go after a country and attack it with the kind of force the United States brought to bear, and to kill so many of these children with missiles that went awry, with sometimes they did not go awry. There was a case of there was a restaurant in Baghdad where the Bush people thought Saddam might be having dinner.
Right.
It was a civilian restaurant.
Yeah.
And it was bombed intentionally. It turned out the intelligence was wrong. Saddam wasn't there.
It was night two or three of the bombing, right?
Right. It was very early on.
Mm-hmm.
And some 20 or so civilians were killed, including children. So there was so much of this unnecessary violence that was inflicted on the Iraqi people by the Bush administration. And for him to pretend that the vast numbers, the tens of thousands of children who've died because the Iraqi soldiers were hiding, using them to hide behind, it was pretty objectionable.
Yeah. The other thing is, Bob, is that he made no effort to even acknowledge the mistakes they've made, the incredible blunders, piled on blunders. The only thing that he allowed was the battle in Iraq has been longer and harder and more costly than we anticipated. Nothing about Jay Garner, followed by Paul Bremer, the debathification, the failure in reconstruction, the reduction in basic services of clean water, sewage, and electricity. He glossed over or just gave us outright falsehoods about the alleged progress that he is claiming. We're going to take a break and return. Robert Perry, my guest. Read his work at consortiumnews.com. He's got a two-part report up called The Iraq War as War Crime, and I recommend it to your attention. We'll resume in a moment from Washington, D.C. I'm your humble host, Peter B. Collins. KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Checking traffic on KRXA, and nothing major to tell you about right now. An older crash at Live Oaks, Soquel Avenue at 7th Avenue. Vehicle and a bicyclist mixed it up. All the activity there off to the side. CHP is on the scene taking a report. A fender bender, Carmel Valley Village West, Carmel Valley Road at Ford Road. Two cars off to the side, actually in a parking lot. CHP there as well. In Hollister, an older injury crash, Hospital Road at Southside Road. Vehicle flipped onto its roof and went into a riverbed. Emergency crews on the scene with that. A tow truck with some cable is on the way. Highway 17. Currently checking, installing, accident-free. Still seeing some of that heavy traffic at the Fishhook. Southbound 17 onto southbound 1 in Santa Cruz. Highway 68, no problems today. And 101 through Salinas, a pretty good drive right now. This is brought to you by Carfax. Would you buy a used car if it was damaged in a fire? Fires destroy a car's electrical and safety systems. Find out about prior fire damage. Ask your dealer for a Carfax vehicle history report or go to Carfax.com. Have a great night. I'm Nate Nix, and that's traffic on KRXA.
Sun Street Centers now offers low-cost transitional housing for men in sobriety. Simply maintain a program of recovery and have 30 days of sobriety to qualify. These apartments are fully furnished with a large kitchen, living room, dining area, cable TV, and laundry. Sun Street is now taking applicants. Seven Suns Transitional Housing for Men with a sincere commitment to their recovery at a low cost. Call 753-5145, 753-5145 to apply. Sun Street Centers in Salinas.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. treats yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Nine minutes in front of the hour, the Peter B. Collins Show, our final few from Washington, D.C. Truly a town without pity. That's our music of the moment from Brian Setzer's orchestra. Oh, that's all we get.
I was getting into it.
Robert Perry is with me here in the studio, and I want you to read his piece at consortiumnews.com, Iraq War as War Crime. And I got a caller I want to get to in just a minute here, but Bob, it's very interesting. I had just a few minutes yesterday at the Take Back America conference with Judiciary Chairman John Conyers. And my listeners believe that the Democrats made a big mistake in taking impeachment so-called off the table.
Right.
And I liken it to a cop who pulls you over wearing a badge that says, "My gun ain't loaded." And, you know, I link it to a lot of the weaknesses that the Democrats have evidenced in trying to cut off funding, trying to change the policy in Iraq, trying to block the draconian reforms to the FISA law that would immunize and deliver amnesty to the phone companies. And with the exception of FISA, and that's most recent, they've been hammered all along the way. And I believe that it's partly because of that. So I asked Conyers, and I know his spiel about impeachment, and I said, "I'm not going to ask you to trot that out again. Will you do me this favor? Will you continue to investigate, expose as much as you can about the wrongdoing, and leave a trail so that we can hope to hold people accountable and at least set an example that we will not tolerate this kind of expansion of powers and intrusion on our constitutional rights by future administrations?" And he gave me a pretty good answer. He says he's working hard to, almost in an encyclopedic way, document all of the wrongdoing of the Bush administration. But my question to you, to the extent you know, is what mechanisms do we have to sue these folks after they leave office? Are they going to be able to immunize themselves by saying, "Look, the Congress routinely kept appropriating money for this war. How can you say that we misled them into it? They went into it with open eyes, they gave us this blank check, and we spent it."
Well, it will be difficult. I mean, they've given themselves almost kind of an amnesty, something like you might have seen in Argentina or someplace after the dirty wars. But I do think Conyers and the others are being disingenuous. I've been in Washington now, well, since the late 1970s, 30 years or so. So what I've learned, though, from that time is that there are certain points where the information ruptures, and that comes when there are big investigations. There may be an event, like when I was involved with the Iran-Contra story. Certain things happened. It got things going. And then there was a demand for information, and it was pulled together by a serious investigation. It didn't go nearly far enough. But from that, you could begin to learn the kind of secret policies that were being conducted and what they meant. If there's not that kind of investigation, a serious effort, not just a drive-by hearing that maybe Congressman Waxman might hold, but a serious hearing, set of hearings with a report that follows, it's very difficult to build the kind of record you're talking about that can be then used. And essentially, the Democrats, not only did they take impeachment off the table, they took pretty much any kind of serious, sustained investigation of these abuses off the table. There have been certain areas, like the prosecutors who were fired, but that's sort of a side issue, really. Mm-hmm. In terms of the big stuff.
And they've gone limp on really pursuing that. And, they're going to court to try to, enforce the subpoenas on Myers and Bolton, the chief of staff. But that stuff will play out long after these guys have left office.
Right, and once you've decided to take impeachment off the table, once you've essentially said, we're not going to escalate this, it gave Bush and Cheney every incentive to say, well, if you're not going to escalate this, we're just going to stonewall you.
Yeah.
And if you're not, and then if you're going to sort of do these...
Catch me if you can.
Exactly. And so the failure to really push for serious investigations, and even things like the report on the abuse of intelligence by the White House, which was prepared, I think, back in 2004, it was promised for release by Senator Rockefeller, yeah, if the Democrats won in 2006. Here we are in 2008, and it's still not been released. So even on things they could have done that were out there, they chose not to.
Marjorie on the Oregon coast is calling. Marjorie, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show with Bob Perry.
Hi, I thought you both would get a kick out of this exchange. Evidently, on Good Morning America today, Martha Raddatz, speaking to Dick Cheney, said, told him about the two-thirds of Americans didn't think that the war was worth it in Iraq. And he said...
And did he say, go F themselves?
No, not this time. But he did say, so. And then she was kind of, like, taken aback, evidently, and said, well, you don't care what the American people think? And he said, no.
Well, that would seem to fit. And basically, unless the American people, through their representatives, can put some kind of enforcement on this, it's not... There's not much that can happen. And these guys are probably right in a cynical way to sort of simply act that way. The Democrats' position, I guess, is that if they should win the White House this fall, they may roll back some of these provisions. We don't know that, really. There's been very little questioning even of Clinton and Obama about what they would do with these powers. Would they renounce them? Obama, to his credit, I think, knows a lot about the Constitution. He lectured on constitutional law, and the chapter in his book, Audacity of Hope, was actually pretty subtle and sophisticated in describing the role of the Constitution. But there's still been no commitment from him or Hillary Clinton to say these are powers that are anathema to a republic, and we renounce them. We do not want an imperial presidency. We want what the founders envisioned when they set up this country and what the American people have fought for over 200 years.
Hillary has made some vague representations that she objects to the expansion of powers under the Bush administration, but she hasn't specified, for example, right, that she would renounce signing statements. And she talks, you know, broadly, I wouldn't say vaguely, but broadly about closing Guantanamo and some of those issues. But as you said, I'd like to hear things much more explicit and comprehensive. Thank you for your call, Marjorie, and for updating us on that. Also, I want to mention there is a peace vigil for our listeners on the Central Coast in Salinas underway right about this hour at 100 West A La Salle. And there's another one on the Monterey Coast at Windows on the Bay. Both, I think, are starting in just a couple of minutes, and if you're able to, I hope you'll join them. Robert Perry, great to see you.
Thank you, Peter.
Visit consortiumnews.com. And I'll be back in the Bay Area tomorrow with another edition of the Peter B. Collins Show, if the Jets are on time. If not, well, tune in and see what happens. Thanks a lot for listening. It's been a blast to be here in Washington. I'm Peter B. Collins.
We're talking again with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. Veronique, I just gave you a nice little chocolate raspberry treat. Can I drink wine and eat chocolate at the same time? Is there a rule against that? Is there a law in France that says I can't?
No, to the contrary. My girlfriends and I sometimes get together and have a treat of chocolate with one absolutely scrumptious wine that we have, which is called Cartagène, which is, again, something that people make in the south of France pretty much for the family. It's a treat, and they pull it out when you go visit them. You know how farmers are and people are close to the land, and they pull out the thing that they've made and they've kept in their cellar, and the foie gras and the special sausage and all this, and they sit around and they share this little treat with them. It's like communion.
Find out more about organic wines at ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. Order by phone toll-free at 888-ECO-WINE. Mention Peter B. Collins and see what happened.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney.
5 years and counting. Today was a time for taking stock.
I'm Peter Mayer at the White House. On this fifth anniversary of the invasion, President Bush serves notice on the issue of troop withdrawals. He again warns against any quick military pullouts.
They must not jeopardize the hard-fought gains our troops and civilians have made over the past year.
The president says his decisions will be based on conditions on the ground and recommendations from war commanders. Troop status is a major campaign issue, with Democrats Clinton and Obama promising drawdowns and Republican McCain supporting the president's strategy.
The point man for that strategy, General David Petraeus, tells CBS News that the U.S. military has to keep building on what it's done and keep trying to get the Shiite-dominated government to integrate thousands of Sunni fighters into the security forces.
It's been time-consuming. It's been frustrating. But some of that, I think, is understandable, because what you're talking about is a government. It's being asked to hire people that were shooting at it, in a sense.
I'm Heather Bosch in Seattle. 5 years after the Iraq War began, the question on many lips.
Was it worth it?
I don't believe it was.
Now we've got hundreds of billions of dollars of deficit. Biggest cost?
Aside from lives?
Loss of life is always the biggest cost.
Reputation, money, and lives.
I think in the balance, it's not worth it.
A new CBS poll shows most Americans do not think the results of the war have been worth the cost.
The American military death toll now approaches 4,000. A Danish newspaper infuriated Muslims 2 years ago when it published a cartoon depicting the Prophet Muhammad with a bomb-shaped turban. Last month, the cartoon was reprinted in Denmark, prompting a rebuke today from Osama bin Laden. In an audio recording, the Al-Qaeda leader says there will be a response.
This takes the threat up a notch, and so... I would just take this one very seriously.
Former CIA analyst Michael Scheuer is a CBS News consultant. The Boston Red Sox were an hour late for their final spring training game in Florida today. The players voted to boycott the contest with the Toronto Blue Jays after learning that their managers, coaches, and trainers wouldn't get the same $40,000 payments they'll receive for next week's season openers in Japan. But after some behind-the-scenes talks, the matter was resolved to the satisfaction of manager Terry Francona.
We do things so much as a ball club, and we're so united. And I don't mean just the players. I mean the staff, the trainers, and our players showed that.